welcome to the Negative World Podcast, the podcast about video games by the Nintendo fans at NegativeWorld.org. This is episode 69, and we're recording this on Wednesday, September 10th, 2014. I'm your host, Steven, and with me is my co-host, Joe.
Hello.
Hey, Joe. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Another excellent edition of the Negative World Podcast coming at everyone's way.
We hope.
Yes, we do. Well, with who we have today, I think it's pretty much a damn guarantee.
We do have some help, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, this episode is a special episode in the vein of episode 55, and for those who might remember, that was Tadpole and the Family. And the reason that we have this special returning guest is because of an awesome Kickstarter and a bunch of other cool things. And that person would be Matthew Taranto.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be back.
Triforce Bun, of course, as he's known on the forums. And welcome, good sir.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, thanks for taking some time out. You're quite the busy man these days.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I kind of have everything scheduled to all sort of finish on October 3rd, you know, when Smash Brothers 3DS comes out. So I think once that happens, it's going to feel like this kind of huge weight kind of lifted, I guess. And I'll be able to enjoy Smash without having to worry about lining up all these things at once.
That does have to be pretty cool, actually, because for the past, I mean, how long have you been doing Brawl in the Family?
It's been about 6.5 years.
Yeah, so you've kind of had that looming.
Yeah.
In a good way, of course.
Right, right. I don't want to make it sound like it's this horrible specter that's been haunting me for half a decade or
Well, even with the podcast, years. You know, I like doing the podcast. Joe does, too. You know, we record this, but it's still... You know, it cuts into your normal life to record,
right.
And then even after, the editing is looming at me or whoever's editing at the time. You know, we've had different editors throughout the years, and it's just, you know, something. Even if you love it, it just sometimes it doesn't always fit well. So it's kind of nice to take a break from it. In this case, a prolonged break, also known as an ending.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, let's jump in then. We have a lot to talk about. This is sort of an interview type thing like last time, but I mean, we're just happy to have you here and just kind of chat about some things you're doing and just some other things in general that Nintendo's got going on. And The first thing that we got to get out of the way is, of course, Brawl in the Family and the fact that it's ending. So I know fans can, if they haven't already, go to your website and check out the latest, BITF podcast. Where you and another fellow talk quite at length about E3 and about the podcast, or not the podcast, the comic ending. Mm-hmm. Not to rehash that so much, but would you tell us like why you decided to end the comic?
Sure. I guess it's kind of a combination of factors, really. There's sort of the main one is just that it's tougher now than ever to come up with ideas that I feel like I haven't already done in the comic or done some variation of. It used to be the brainstorming sequence, like the brainstorming part of making a comic would take me, you know, maybe on average, it really varied actually pretty heavily, but on average it would be about 10 minutes per comic. And this year, you know, near the end, as we got closer and closer to the end of the comic, it started becoming longer and longer to the point where sometimes I could sit down for like an hour and a half with a sketchbook and just not come up with anything that I felt was really usable enough for the comic. So that was kind of frustrating. Also, I feel like one of the things that I feel like I've kind of pushed these characters to about as far as I can take them before I guess I'm bending them too far. You know, there's some flexibility there because they're Nintendo characters, and I feel like they have a lot of personality, but at the same time, you can't really play with them too much, you know, before they become something else entirely.
Sure.
And I guess one of the last things was, Brawl in the Family, you know, I love doing it and everything, but it's really more of a, it's something that requires knowledge of something else. It's a parody comic. It's about Nintendo characters and everything. And I feel like I can't really take that and stay with it forever. You know, I feel like I'd want to move on to something that's, 100% like my creation, my ideas and everything, rather than something that's more of like a parody.
Sure. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a fair reason to do it. And it's not like you've only done it for a short time and, you know, gave it only a little try. I mean, the comic's going to reach 600 issues or whatever you'd want to call it, and that's quite something. That's kind of monumental, I'd say. I don't have this in our outline, but how far did you ever see it going in the first place?
it's kind of interesting. When it started, I wasn't really planning on making it a webcomic at all. I was just kind of putting some drawings up on the IGN boards just to see if people would,
right.
I don't know, to give someone maybe a chuckle for like an afternoon, you know? But I think once people seemed to really be receptive to it and I started up the actual website, I think an early idea of mine for like finishing it would be around 120. Just because I was thinking of like the whole Super Mario 64 thing, I thought it'd be cool to have 120 comics. You know, you have 120 stars. But, that number came and went. And I kept doing it, and it kind of got bigger and bigger. So I hadn't really started thinking about ending it until about, I think near the end of last year, probably around October, actually. So almost exactly a year ago. I started kind of planning on, you know, where would be a good spot to end it and if I was ready to end it or what. So
it's kind of interesting that you say the 120 thing, because 600 is divisible by 120. So,
it is.
Yeah. You've got like a five times what you
intended.
Yeah, I've
gone five times longer than, all right. Yeah. That's not bad.
So that's like five Mario games, you know, that's,
yeah,
that's five, a franchise three, right there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, cool. That's pretty cool. I guess next thing I wanted to ask is, not to jump ahead, but in the Kickstarter, you've got Lost Comics coming into play, which right. I'm really excited for, to see these different concepts and everything. But is there anything that you've really wanted to touch on over the years that never even really got too far in your, you know, enough to even go into your Lost Comics stage? I mean, or for one reason or another, just never, you know.
Never just materialized at all. Yeah. There's really, I'm sure that I have actually like dozens and dozens of these ideas kind of in the back of my head somewhere, or in one of these like eight or nine different sketchbooks that I've got just full of comic ideas and drawings. But a few that come to mind, one of my favorites actually that I could never quite completely get around was a story arc, you know, one of the multi-part comics.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was actually a mystery. It was called Death in the Family. And, yeah. It would be like kind of a murder mystery thing, and it would sort of take that whole approach, like the Who Shot Mr. Burns kind of approach, where you have all these clues and red herrings kind of tucked away. It would have been really cool, but it ended up being, I guess, just a little bit too ambitious. I could never fully get the entire concept to work, I guess. So I just kind of put it off for a while until, I guess now the comic's ending, so I can't really have it happen. That was one idea. Another one was, pretty much every Halloween I do some sort of Halloween related comic. I thought it'd be actually be really fun, if one year I did, this kind of spooky, like, approach to it where it would seem like the site was, like, haunted somehow. And, I don't know if any of y'all are familiar with, like, the whole internet creepypasta thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, okay, so it's like, I went to this weird garage sale and bought this black cartridge from this weird old man, and I turned it on, and Mario's eyes were melting. You know, it's always something like that.
It's like that Majora's Mask, that famous...
the Majora's Mask thing, kind of thing like that, where it's like twisted versions of things. I thought it would be cool if, for one Halloween, if readers would go to the site, and they would see like one of like 20 randomly generated images, that I would put up, you know, in the code. They'd see one comic, but if you refresh it, you'd see a different comic.
Mm-hmm.
But the comics would all be like older comics that have already been on the site, but they'd be like a little twisted or disturbing in some way, you know, like there'd be a skeleton or a zombie replacing one of the characters. And it would just be like, or they'd just be like a complete non-punchline instead of like an actual punchline. It'd just be like something kind of weird and eerie. And the blog post at the bottom would be completely oblivious to this. It'd be like, well, I thought this idea was kind of cute for Halloween, so I thought it'd be kind of funny. So let me know what you guys think. And then, I was kind of thinking it'd be fun because people on the boards would be like, I just got this really weird comic on the site. I don't know what this is supposed to be, you know, and they'd link to it. And then other people would say, oh, I got this one. This is weird, you know. So
sure.
that was kind of a Halloween idea that I thought would be really fun to do. But, it would have required a little bit of programming, and that's not really my strong suit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So they all would have had like the same number as if it was the new one, but they all, it would be just different. Yeah, each time.
It would have been the same number. It would have been the same title. You know, it'd been like Halloween Fun or something, you know, generic that would fit any of the comics, but all, everything that they would see would be like, a kind of weird, disturbing version of an old comic, you know?
Right, right.
Nothing like completely ghastly, but like, you know, kind of spooky and mysterious.
So you weren't going to turn super dark or anything?
Nah, you know, cause I that's kind of one of the things with Brawl in the Family I have to keep in mind is that a lot of people read it with their kids or their younger siblings, and you know, you have that responsibility of not like completely horrifying people.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm gonna be showing this to my kids.
All right, that's
in the
awesome.
Future, you know, that's one of the reasons I want to get the hardcovers is because they're gonna last, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think my nephews might be into it because they're they've really become Nintendo fans over the past few years, and although I would definitely want to keep an eye on them because kids don't have the same respect for proper merchandise as an adult, you know.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I got to say about your death dinner dinner mystery
murder mystery.
Oh yeah.
Thank you, Joe. You know, it's too bad that Professor Layton wasn't a Smash Brothers character because that would have probably felt right in a place, you know.
Yeah, he would have been like the main detective behind that, I'm sure.
But
had you picked out who would have been the culprit?
One of the mysteries involved would actually involve I have this kind of joke character called Dee-Dee-Doo, who looks just like Dee-Dee-Dee but with a mustache and a trench coat. And one of the twists would involve something happening to him, but it actually turns out it wasn't actually him, it was Dee-Dee-Doo in that disguise for some reason. You know, so there'd be some sort of, there'd be a hint, you know, that readers could hopefully figure out towards that development. But that was one of the things. I don't know if there would actually be like a specifically a murder, because I don't know if I could have like Bowser kill someone. You know, I don't know if he's actually killed anyone, but it would be along those lines. You know, it'd be a whodunit, and it would have a twist and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't really fully fleshed it out.
Okay. Cool. That's still really cool, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just another example of the brilliant ideas you've had all these years.
Oh, thanks.
So I guess what makes me, you know, think after hearing that this comic is going to end is, do you ever plan on maybe doing another comic in the future? I know you were saying you would maybe branch out into something that's your own, but would that be a comic by chance or something else?
You know, it's kind of funny because sometimes I look up to see what people are saying about the comic ending, and a lot of people are convinced that I'm just going to start a new comic right after Brawl in the Family ends called, like, For Wii U in the Family or For Smash, For 3DS in the Family. like the whole Brawl in the Family ending is just, like, a name thing, you know, and I'm starting this new Smash Brothers comic about the new Smash Brothers.
You could do
game.
Sakurai in the Family, and then
Sakurai in the
Family. You can be the lead, you know.
You can be the lead about Sakurai. Yeah. But I have to say that right now I'm not. I don't have any immediate plans for another webcomic. Part of the reason I feel like I'm going to be a little bit relieved with Brawl in the Family is just because there's actually kind of a lot of pressure when making a webcomic. When you have all these panels kind of leading up to this final punchline panel, you know, there's all that pressure on the punchline. And, I feel like TV shows and stuff, like even comedy shows, you know, they have to be funny, but they don't have that pressure, to have a joke at this specific spot, you know, or this, you have to have this number of jokes per episode. I feel like that's kind of something I'm going to not really miss about doing a webcomic is, that sense of, oh, I have to tell a joke in this comic kind of thing. So, at the moment, I'm kind of focusing on games and stuff. But I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe I'll get the itch to make another webcomic later on down the line. But yeah, right now I don't have any further plans for one. Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. I guess the last thing that I wanted to mention, Joe, you can step in if you've got other things to add, since this might be the last time we really talk about Brawl in the Family. But one thing that I was looking back at some of the old comics, and I just realized how much I appreciate that the comic has not just been something enjoyable for Nintendo fans, but it's kind of been a barometer for the climate in the Nintendo fandom, as well as just like what Nintendo as a company's been doing. Because, I mean, you don't always go talk about or do comics about like the newest thing or whatever. And that's actually, I think I appreciate that, because then you're not stuck kind of looking at it as a just a historical perspective. You know, they can stand alone and they can live pretty much forever in that sense without having to have that historical context. But at the same time, you know, you did a really funny one called Golf Advantage, number 561. And that was around the time that Mario Golf came out. And then I just looked again, and you know, 589, which you just did not too long ago, was about Hyrule Warriors and the whole fact that, you know, everyone, including the bad guys, are fighting for evil, and Link is not the only hero right now, and so it's just clever stuff. But it's kind of nice that it's, I guess I'm kind of saying that both aspects are nice. That one, you have these comics that just kind of are one-offs and they don't really relate to the world around us, but they might express how we felt as a community. While then you also have these ones that express how Nintendo is trying to present themselves and kind of some oversights maybe they're making in terms of what their, you know, games are showing us.
Yeah, I'll definitely second that, because I think that that's one technique, and you can comment how conscious of a decision this was, but you know, it kind of kept it, I think, fresh on its own, because that meant that anytime you would go and check for a new comic, it was less predictable what it might be that you were talking about. You know, it wasn't just like, oh, this happened this week, so there's going to be a comic about it. There might be, or you might, you know, talk about something else, you know, make a joke about something from, you know, 20 years ago, depending on what the lore you were playing off of in that one strip was about. So,
yeah,
it just made it interesting. Just kept it more interesting, less predictable.
All right, well, thanks, guys. I think my approach to that has generally been, like, I kind of feel like good games are timeless. So that's sort of like the thing with this comic. Like, I know some comics, they focus more on games that just came out. And, like, all the time. And, you know, sometimes it'll be, like, executives talking, you know, like, making kind of a boneheaded decision based on the news that week. I guess the way I kind of look at it is I can make a joke about Super Mario Brothers, because Super Mario Brothers, to me, is always going to be... It's going to have some relevance, you know? It's not going to be... I mean, it's an older game, but it's not outdated, you know? Just like Star Wars is not outdated. It's... These are things that I feel always will have a place. So a lot of the comics...
The person who's teaching video game design at my college, just this week, they started their semester. She started with Super Mario Brothers as, you know, game one to introduce people to the concept. So absolutely timeless.
Yeah, I mean, it's a like great place to start. So. But the thing is, like, I feel like all these games kind of... I mean, obviously not all of them are as major as Super Mario Brothers, but the way this comic kind of looks at video games in general is that kind of it's all fair game. And so I like to have kind of have a wide spectrum of just games from different times kind of mixed in with some of the more current stuff like Mario Golf and Hyrule Warriors, just because, like you said, that's kind of going to be on Nintendo fans' minds at the time. They'll be thinking about this game. So, you know, they'd probably enjoy seeing a comic about it. And, I guess ultimately, I just like making Brawl in the Family a comic into a comic that I feel like I would want to read as a Nintendo fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost unfortunate to think that like you weren't lucky enough to just be able to experience your work. You know, like you had to go through all the trouble making it, while we just got to love it, and that kind of sucks in some respect. But then again, of course, there's a whole gratification to making it, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's great that so many Nintendo fans kind of share that sense of humor and everything. I feel like that's really cool. And I actually really like how I think a lot of people that enjoy Nintendo games have kind of gotten even more attached to characters and games and stuff because of Brawl in the Family. I think that's something that actually makes me feel really happy that I could, you know, I'm parroting Nintendo's characters and stuff, but I don't want to come across as malicious or anything. So I'm glad that I feel like there are new fans of characters and stuff because of this comic.
Well, I think what you've done, and I don't remember which comic this was, but I just looked at it today as well, and what you've done is you've taken some characters, and probably all of them if I was to look back at every comic, but you've taken some characters who may not get as much limelight from Nintendo themselves, such as Captain Falcon, and you've given them more of a personality, even if it's kind of a comical one that may not be canon per se, but and with him, I mean, there's that comic where he's at a party and he's looking at his glass of punch and he's about to say Falcon Punch as a joke, and then Ness steps in and is like, "Hey, Falcon Punch," and steals the show.
Yeah.
You can see he's all upset about it. Mm-hmm. And Ness is like getting all the credit and everything. And but just the fact that Falcon, Captain Falcon, could be almost like Falcon Punch could be part of his identity, and it was stolen by Ness, is just kind of like deeper on some level. And and it's, you know, and Nintendo's not putting any F-Zero games out there, so they're not making any commentaries. So it helps keep those characters alive. You've probably done Nintendo a damn service.
Well, I mean, I'd definitely be happy to, you know, because I mean they've given me a lot to like over the years for sure. So I definitely hope people walk away from Brawl in the Family feeling kind of an appreciation for Nintendo if they didn't have one before.
Yeah, well, clearly the amount of people I think is definitely up there. If we can switch topics to your Kickstarter right now.
Mm-hmm.
As of this literal recording, you have 971 backers, and they've pledged $106,550, which is not a couple bucks.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more than a couple bucks. And, just, I mean, 971 backers is quite a bit for any Kickstarter, let alone one that has decently hefty price tiers, you know, I mean, you definitely have some affordable ones, but if people want to get the true collector's items, it definitely costs something. And there's people, I mean, I watched your Kickstarter the second it started, and nobody has an issue paying this money. It's so awesome to see people just like, oh yeah, that one makes sense, that one makes sense. Oh, I want this in here. So it's pretty awesome to see, like, for instance, yeah, I just moused over it. The $180 tier has 110 backers.
Yeah.
So, you know, more than 10% of your backers are paying nearly $200 for your stuff. That's wonderful, you know. And and then if you compare it to your previous, I must have lost the link. If you compare it to the first one, you know, I mean, you were asking for so much less, and you had so many fewer backers. You've kind of, I mean, maybe the book one helped to some degree, but I mean, I think your fandom has grown and grown, and the passion to support you has grown as well.
Yeah, I think there's really a lot of factors there. I mean, for starters, I'm ecstatic about the Kickstarter. Obviously, it's really exciting. My mom keeps calling me every day, and she's like, "I can't stop looking at this thing." You know, she's beside herself. I didn't know what to expect, actually. At first, I know Volume 1 was successful, but I was worried, you know, like, am I doing too many Kickstarters? You know, because I mean, I did a Tadpole Trouble Kickstarter, and I'm doing the music for Nefarious, which isn't specifically like my game, but it's one that had just come out, and the Kickstarter was running alongside mine, and I was just really hoping that fans would not be burnt out on Kickstarters at this point. And I mean, doing two books at the same time and doing the, you know, hardcovers and stuff, and the cost of the books are really high. There were a lot of unknowns coming into this, and I just kind of went into it thinking, you know, I'm going to put this up and hopefully people will be for it. And if not, you know, the worst thing that'll happen is that the books won't get made. But yeah, the response was just really overwhelming, and I'm just really glad people, are excited about getting the books and are willing to pledge at the higher tiers and stuff. I think that's great.
Yeah, you say that, you know, the worst thing that could happen is the books won't get made. And I think 971 people have said, nah.
Yeah.
You know, they're making sure this gets made.
They're making sure it gets made. That's true. I was careful about the tiers to kind of, I wanted to space them out to where there was something kind of in every price range.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wanted to have like something just a little bit better around the corner for like a lot of them. So I think the slipcase was a big draw for a lot of people. That holds the entire trilogy.
I got suckered into that.
that was kind of the big ticket item.
I mean, I looked at it and it's not necessary for me to have it, you know. But you know, with DVDs, I like having it whenever I have a big set of seasons and stuff. And I think it features your art. It's got a nice style. You know, I thought that was a kind of a cool addition. I didn't expect you to do that.
Yeah. I almost wasn't able to do it just because of the price they were quoting me for it, but I'm glad I went ahead and did it because I think it really kind of ties everything together in kind of a nice way, and I think a lot of people are going to be happy to have that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big solid, you know, slipcase. You know, they quoted me on a cardstock one as well, but you know, it wasn't that much cheaper than the other one, so I just went with the big deluxe one.
Sure. Well, and that's the key thing here is the first Kickstarter brought us, at least for, I've never seen the soft cover, but the hardcover book is such a great quality book that I think that has such an inherent value that may not even have been apparent at the time. I mean, I wasn't there for the initial Kickstarter. I actually got my book through the Tadpole Treble Kickstarter, and I was just unaware, oblivious of the first one, and so I'm more than psyched that I have it now. And but it is such a great quality, and looking through your Kickstarter when it came out, like roughly a week ago,
it was about a week ago.
Okay, you know, you're definitely aiming to get the same quality out of it, and have it. You know, I guess I wasn't really gonna kind of analyze your Kickstarter on the podcast, but I might as well now. I think you just handled things really well. I was gloating to my girlfriend about it, just because, you know, as a friend and fellow Negative Worlder, I'm just, you know, a big fan of your work and just a big support. Thanks. And everything. But I also can see when someone's being really smart about how they're handling things. I mean, one, you're not brief, and we don't want long-windedness in a Kickstarter, but you don't just say, like, oh, I want to make the books because they're probably pretty cool if people have them. Like, you have so much heart into your paragraphs, and then you also use your own art for everything, which is brilliant because it just shows not only your talent, but that it just immerses people in the world of Brawl in the Family in a way that you want to when you're trying to sell them this item. And I've recently seen some other Kickstarters that I've wanted to support, but they just didn't impress me enough to warrant my money because I didn't. If they couldn't get a Kickstarter that was engaging, I wasn't convinced they could do the product in an engaging way either. In fact, one of them was an Android. I think it was an Android and iPhone version, but it was a digital version of Key to the Kingdom, which is a board game from the 90s that I loved growing up. And my copy, you know, being a kid, I lost pieces and stuff like that, so I can never play it again unless I pay like $200 for someone's copy. So the fact that these guys wanted to make a one for my my Android phone, I was like, sweet. But they weren't getting a lot of support, and I think it's because they didn't have anything that was compelling to show that they really had the drive and the capability to do what they were going to do. They didn't seem like they were as invested, like, oh, it's a cool idea, but... So I don't see that here. I mean, you show examples of your work, you give good reasons for everything that you're asking for, even the $56,000 initial cost. You know, you broke it down.
I thought that was pretty vital just because it was a lot more than book one. So I kind of wanted to answer that question, you know, early on, like, where is this money going?
Yeah, and I don't know if it would have affected someone maybe on the individual level, but when you're adding to a Kickstarter, you're not just purchasing something for yourself, but you obviously are, you know, doing the collective attempt to get something made. And so when someone can see, okay, I'm going to get this back because your tiers are so well written. I'm going to get this back. That's cool. I can't wait to get that. But they see what they're giving towards as well, and really what their money's going towards. And I think that's when someone has value in that and they feel like they're really actually making a difference, as opposed to, well, couldn't they do that in like 20 grand? And am I just paying them for, you know, stuff they don't need? Not that people shouldn't get paid extra.
Yeah.
And I hope that you don't, you know, at the end of all this, you're not just left at zero and it's all gone into production costs, you know. Buy yourself some, you know, a nice beverage or something while you work, you know, something like that. But
one beverage.
Just one beverage. Your favorite expensive martini.
I learned that the hard way, actually, from volume one. I underestimated a few of the costs, and that ended up being pretty tough to work around. There's international shipping is a huge one that I had underestimated. And I'd advise anyone that's out there thinking about doing a Kickstarter, do not neglect international shipping. Get the actual cost of what your items are going to be. I mean, sorry, not the cost, the weight of what your items are going to be to ship. Yeah, go put them into the USPS site and figure out how much it's going to cost to ship it to like Great Britain and to Australia, because you're going to be paying that a lot if your Kickstarter is a success. And, and if you, underprice it, like I did on volume one, you're going to end up paying a lot through the pocket.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure that bites, certain Kickstarters in the ass.
So it happens.
And, you know, you're upfront about it. Every tier, has a different, you know, note about how much it's going to cost to ship out to the U.S. And they're not always the same either. It looks like you've kind of estimated it appropriately versus depending on what's in the tier.
Right, right.
So, you know, again, there's really nobody should have any questions when they visit your Kickstarter. And I think that's why it was able to succeed in 2 days. I mean, I told you that I think the Kickstarter was available for maybe a day or less when I first approached you about coming back on the show. And I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know how many listeners we have, really. I mean, but I figured it could help in some way, or at least be a fun, thing to, to have, on the record. And then you succeeded in 2 days. And then by the time that, recording this, you've already hit your fourth, or well, it might be your third stretch goal, but your fourth tier, kind of, your fourth level.
Right.
So I don't think you need our help.
But, well, we could always use more listeners for sure.
Yeah, but
more readers.
But that's the thing. I mean, there's still so many other cool stretch goals that you've thought of, and and again, they all seem very logical. They're not priced inappropriately. You know, you didn't go from 100K and then jump to 160 and say, "Oh, I need 60,000 for the new story." You know, I mean,
right.
And we already have the first new story. I guess I'll go through the stretch goals here really quick for people who may not have visited the Kickstarter. But already, since the book is funded, or both books are funded, and they're funded in just initially their standard form, that was the 56,000. But then they hit the 70,000 quality boost, which means they're going to be as awesome as the first books, if not even better. Then you've got the a new story poem, which, you know, the first book had that longer story that that you generated just for the book, right?
Yeah, that was actually inspired by Calvin Hobbes books, where Bill Watterson had said that since the comics were already in newspaper form, he wanted to add something new to the books. And I really like that philosophy, and I think it's especially relevant with web comics, because the comics are on the internet. So I mean, that's kind of been a goal of mine with these books, is to add something extra to them. So that's kind of one of the ways to do that, is to have that sort of prelude story poem,
right? And so we're going to get that for the volume 2 right now.
Yes.
But not necessarily volume 3. That's hopefully coming.
Right.
That's a key distinction. And then the last one that we've hit so far, or you've hit, I should say, I have nothing to do with this Kickstarter.
you've supported it, so that's something.
Yeah, well, I guess I feel like I'm part of the team. You know, I may be wearing a shirt right now that says Brawl in the Family Kickstarter. I didn't tell you about that. We were very far away from each other on Earth, so I didn't think you'd notice. But so anyway, the fourth level is the 100,000 Lost Comics, which I was really excited that this got hit. And I appreciate that you put it earlier than maybe other things. You know, I mean, I could see you rearranging some of these tiers to, you know, I guess maybe entice. But you're going to give us such a quality product from the get-go now. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so the next tier that you're working on is... the 120,000. That's the MP3s for all backers, which I know got a lot of questions right from the start of, you know, because some of your comics are in their pure form in a YouTube video, because they have music and everything with them,
right?
Well, you've done some YouTube, but you've also, isn't there a comic or two that's actually just the comic, but you ask people to hear the music and play it as they read it?
The earlier songs did that. The later ones, I kind of forego that and just kind of have them on video form entirely.
Yeah.
Mostly because we couldn't really figure out a way for readers to to know that there's a song and to activate it themselves without it playing automatically. There were kind of a lot of technical hurdles throughout the lifetime of Brawl in the Family that I or my friend Chris didn't really know the best way to overcome. So we just have to kind of work around it the best we can. And one of the ways to do that was just to have it in video form, so people knew there was sound and they knew when to play it and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And so for these MP3s, if this goal's hit, will it just be like a download link, probably?
It's going to be I'm trying to think of the technical term. Yeah, it'll be like a zip file or something, where it's going to have like It's gonna be more than last time. It's gonna be all the songs. Someone asked for karaoke versions so they could sing along. no lyrics, and I could probably do that as well. And it's actually gonna be more than volume one, and there's gonna be something that no one's heard before.
Ooh.
Yet.
Probably the Negative World podcast theme that you're doing for us, right?
Negative World podcast theme. That's right.
Isn't there I think you said there's almost 10, there's a little bit less than 10, songs that were used in the comics?
There were songs, but there's also these, there's these medleys of instrumental music that I use for a couple of comics as well that I'd like to, like there's a Mega Man one for Comic 500.
Yep.
There's a Mario one for earlier on, I think, 350. So I'd like to include those as well, just because, you know.
Okay, all right.
Because why not?
Yeah, no, absolutely, you know.
It's music. Yeah, and the reason for this is because I feel like it's, you know, it's a major part of the comic, and it's one that I can't actually portray in book form,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, I mean, I have some of the songs available on sale, like, to buy through the site, but I think this is kind of a nice freebie, because every backer can get it, and it's, like, just block, you know, big block of music, so.
Right.
That's the current one right now.
Mm-hmm. With the Happy Jumping books,
mm-hmm.
making their way through the quest, and
they're happy.
Going back to what I was saying about your presentation, I mean, not everyone's going to do this, man. And the fact that you've got this awesomely drawn, like, world, and it makes sense to a gamer's mind of going through the different levels, and you've hit on the different franchises with Metroid and Mario and Smash Brothers, and mm-hmm. of course, one of my favorites right now, Animal Crossing, with a cameo from KK Slider.
Yeah.
And so, again, I can't help but kind of be really impressed with what you've got here.
Well, thanks.
So,
I kind of figured that'd be a fun way to present things, just kind of to appeal to the gamers, you know?
Yeah.
Present it as a series of challenges.
You know your audience, and that's what you're doing, you know? Not mm-hmm. everyone who makes a Kickstarter seems to get that, and or maybe the problem with some people is that other Kickstarters are trying to appeal to everybody. They're trying to just find everyone. Like, there was some arts and crafts ones I was looking at recently, just out of curiosity, and, you know, they don't necessarily have a person in mind. They're more like, I just want to support my hobby, as opposed to, I like to give to the people who like this.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, there's different aspects about a Kickstarter, whether or not you want to help somebody or get something from it. There's kind of a balance of both. I think that's how, you know, donations are made.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so I just think that this, you know, yours does a good job of portraying that, while others, you know, may not. And hopefully, you know, the ones that that really are worth backing get the, you know, get their limelight. But
yeah,
Joe, is there anything you want to add here before I kind of move us forward?
Nope. Nope. Everything you're saying. I'm just kind of nodding my head in agreement.
So fair enough.
You guys are doing great.
I just didn't want to be, you know, cutting over you or anything. That's, I just want to make sure.
Nope.
I'm not keeping too close an eye on the Skype chat. So.
Yeah.
Now, Matt, I can't move forward with this podcast until I ask you, what's the chance that you're going to be sending everyone just two volumes of blank pages with a giant Waluigi head in the middle of it? I mean, are you trolling us with this? And are you just going to run away with $100,000?
I think legally I could do that. I think that's very possible. It's a great idea. It's terrific. You know, expecting volumes 2 and 3. Too bad. It's Waluigi time. He's back. No, honestly, pretty low. You know, okay. Not 0%, but pretty low.
You should do like a Willy Wonka thing where 10 people get those books, and at the back is like a plane ticket. To fly to
get a tour of my house.
Yeah, a tour of your house, and then somebody turns into a blueberry, and somebody drowns in chocolate.
Oh, okay, and then so there's one true fan out of all of them at the end.
Yes, and then they continue brawling the family.
Oh, that's a nice idea.
There you go.
They can't draw,
and they look like Gene Wilder in a weird kind of, you know, moment. But
in a hat. Yeah. I said good day, sir.
So okay, obviously I'm kidding, and you know. Nobody should be worried about that happening.
Yeah, it'll be legit. It'll be a legit operation.
Oh, yeah. Well, clearly, I mean, you've shown so much, I'm pretty sure you probably have these books, like, half done. Because clearly you put a lot of work into this.
I'd like to say that I have, but right now I'm just focusing on the end of the comic.
Right, yeah. No, and that's where it should be. So awesome. Now let's jump to some other projects you're working on. You've kind of touched upon them a bit already. Mm-hmm. Let's start first with one that you're not directly, well, I mean, you're directly involved, but it's not your project per se.
Right.
And that would be Nefarious.
Yeah.
By Josh Hano.
Josh Hano. Yeah. Josh Nefarious. Hano. Actually, this is kind of an interesting story how I met Josh Hano. He actually emailed me, about 3 years ago saying, hey man, I really like your comic. I've been working on this game and it's about this, villain character, like a Bowser type that kidnaps princesses. And, you know, it's an action game. And it's kind of a reversal where you kidnap princesses. And he showed me some, you know, some art that he did for it. And, you know, back then I was looking at the art and I was like, wow, this looks really good. It's a cool idea. And, he had emailed me because he had heard Ode to Minions, which was my 200th comic that was, you know, all about, singing about the minions. It's a ballad devoted to the minions of the gaming world who were, you know, putting their lives out there. And he wanted to have this song Ode to Minions in his game as like this karaoke song, like that you could sing, while the villain's kind of chilling out with his minions in like the karaoke bar and stuff, you know, between levels. So, I said, yeah, that sounds great. You know, just, you can use it as long as you give credit to Bro and the Family or, you know, me, Matthew. And I'd never heard from him for like, you know, again, until like maybe a year ago, where it turns out he lives in Baton Rouge and, he wanted to go ahead and bring Nefarious, you know, to life through a Kickstarter. So, he's actually working with us right now, on Tadpole Treble. We did a little bit of a skill swap where I'm doing, some of the music for Nefarious in exchange for him doing some of the music for, I mean, some of the art for Tadpole Treble, because he's a really good artist. He's good with animations. And, we've had him on a lot of the, kind of organic creatures like animations. Mm-hmm. So, a skill swap is actually a really cool way to, for indie developers to work because, you know, if you have a very limited budget, you can exchange, you know, something you're good at for something they're good at, you know, kind of for each other's projects. So that's sort of the agreement that we had worked on for a little bit. And, that's where that first song for Nefarious came from that I had composed for him. So yeah, Nefarious, like I said, it's about a villain that is, kidnapping princesses. It's an action game. And the first half of each stage, you're kind of, you're infiltrating this area with the main character, the anti-hero Crow. And, you know, you got like grenades and stuff and you're fighting like sentry robots. And it's got a really nice art style to it. It's got kind of a cartoony sort of mischievous look and everything's like really smoothly animated. There's a lot of vibrant colors. I've been really impressed with what he's shown me with the animations and the game running and everything. And, in the second half of the level, you've, captured one of, you know, several princesses and each of them has their own personality and their own quirks. You know, there's like a bug princess. There's like an electric one. And, the thing is, when you're escaping with the princess, you're running from these police forces and these heroes. And the princess herself, grants Crow some sort of power as he's, you know, carrying her out. For instance, like the bug one I was talking about, the hornet princess, like when you jump, she'll flap her wings and it'll give you kind of a higher jump. So the level is built around that, for instance. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that, kind of reversal of the whole princess saving princess trope kind of going on where instead you're the villain, you're capturing princesses. And, you know, those big Mega Man bosses that you fight, like in Dr. Wily's castle that are always like really huge and not very mobile, but they're, you know, they got these big wide attacks and the hero is very nimble and kind of jumping around. Mm-hmm. They have these battles as well in the game, except you're the one controlling the really huge, you know, robot boss. Right. So it's kind of a reverse boss battle. And, it's actually really cool because there's a lot of, you know, there's actually a lot of characterization he's put into the game. I don't know how much I'm actually allowed to reveal at this point, but the princesses themselves have a lot of personality and I think there are actually a lot of really fun characters in the game that I think would be really memorable, if it hits its goal.
Yeah, that's pretty much what sold me on, supporting this Kickstarter myself was, you know, when I first was looking at the Kickstarter, which, you know, Josh does a really good job, like you do, at really showing off what it's about and not leaving it to be vague. Of course, mm-hmm. You know, he can only show so much because it's in progress and he doesn't want to spoil story or gameplay, you know, secrets and other cool things to be revealed later. But
Right.
You know, he does a great job of showcasing and proving why I think that this game could be completed and why there's been a lot of love going into it and creativity. The things you've said, like the different princesses and the reverse boss battles, I haven't seen those in any games. Mm-hmm. At least not on this kind of level, you know.
Right.
So, I don't know, you know, I mean, I don't know what else to say really about it, since it's, you know, you can only say so much, but it's coming to Wii U by default if it makes its goal.
That's right.
Which is also a really cool thing, because I appreciate that it's not some sort of, you know, tier that's like three times the initial amount kind of thing, which yeah. tends to happen. I know with Tapple Treble, you brought the Wii U version in pretty soon. It wasn't too much more. Obviously, yeah. there are extra costs to going from computer to a console.
That's
but,
right.
But some of these, I mean, clearly, you know, you can do it in X amount of dollars per your Kickstarter, while others, like I said, you know, really do, you know, they ask you to add another $150,000. And, you know, maybe some games do require that, but sometimes it just seems like it's not actually a goal they're trying to actually hit. You know?
Right. Yeah, it's a little hard to tell if it's just trying to appeal to that audience, or if it's, you know, they generally want to make it for these systems. Yeah. Not, so
I was very happy to see that.
Yeah. If Nefarious hits its goal, it would get, it would jump right in at, or for the Wii U, as well as, PC and Mac and, Linux, I believe.
And it looks like it'd be right at home.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, for sure.
So
I get a little bit of a Wario vibe.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and actually I was going to ask, so what, there's that first half that's like an infiltration. Is the escape kind of take place in the same area but backwards, or is it just a new level?
I'm not 100% sure of. I'm pretty sure it's a new level within like a similar environment.
Yeah, right. Okay.
You know, so like this the city environment you see in a lot of the promo screenshots, I think that's actually the first level.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure the escape is a different environment, because I know that Josh has stressed that he wants to you know, have these princesses each have a different ability. So I think that would actually change the level design a bit.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm one person, but, as far as like Wario Land Shake It, it didn't sit super awesome with me, to have to run back to the level, but I guess that's kind of been part of, maybe some other games, or I don't know the history too much of it, but so, I mean, I'm pleased to see that it's just kind of a continued level with the same kind of theme and building on it.
Right.
But, you know, talking back, I guess one more thing, you know, related to you, though. So how much music have you really worked on with the game so far? There is a sample on the Kickstarter, which I entice everyone to go listen to, which is really, really awesome. I think it's only like a 30-second snippet, but it sounds really good. I can totally see where it fits in with the themes of the sample screenshots and videos that he's got on there.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah, how much have you worked on so far?
So far the music, I've actually only done that, that's kind of the first level slash kind of main theme. It's longer than the sample there. I've actually written the whole song, and I think they're going to reveal the whole song before the end of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's the main one I've done so far. We're kind of waiting to see what happens with the Kickstarter, before I proceed with that. Right now, I am planned to, well, he does plan for me to be the main composer for the game.
Mm-hmm.
So if it succeeds, I'm definitely going to do more music. I'd love to do more, like, I've got kind of a big band sort of jazzy, like, sound to it. And I'd love to keep doing variations on that and kind of some different... It's a little bit of a different style of music than Tadpole Treble from what I've done so far.
Right.
So it's definitely been fun to write. And, I'm trying to do live instrumentation, you know, wherever I can as well. I've got my dad on the trumpet and my mom on the clarinet, and I'm doing the saxophone.
Nice.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It's all in the family.
It is all in the family. It's true. Very nice. Yeah. So. Also, there was something I was really proud of with, the composing of Crow's main theme, which is in part of that is in this song, but you can't actually hear it in the sample clip. But, I took the notes B, A, and D, and, I kind of start with that. As like the beginning of the melody.
Very clever.
Awesome. So I kind of played. It starts on that da da da, and I kind of played off of that, and that's kind of like his main theme. You can't actually hear it in the sample, but it's in the full version.
See, this is what I'm saying. There's so much creativity and brilliance going into these couple of Kickstarters. I just, you know, I'm really hoping for them.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And right now, Nefarious is, let's see, roughly like 23 grand away from its goal, 23 and a half. So, you know, it's past the halfway point, but it's not quite there yet. There's 8 days to go as of this recording. Hopefully I can get this out quick, and there still will be some days left. You know, because I would like people to be able to hear us talk about Nefarious. I mean, and I guess my last question about Nefarious is, and you may not be able to answer this. I don't know, and I'm not trying to presume anything because I really do hope it succeeds. But if Nefarious doesn't make its Kickstarter goal, is the game going to just kind of drop dead right there, or is it going to continue forward in some way? Do they plan on maybe refining a Kickstarter or trying to find other ways, PayPal or other options?
That I'm actually not too sure of, just because I'm technically just the the music guy.
Yeah, fair enough.
I can't give you a solid answer on that. I know that Josh really likes the project, but I'm not entirely sure of his future plans, depending on how the Kickstarter goes.
And so that'd be a shame, I think.
Yeah, it would. We really want to see it succeed, for sure.
But you can't, you know, blame someone. I mean, they have to, obviously, these Kickstarters, again, aren't just for Mai Tais and, you know, fancy snacks. These, you know, they need these funds to you know, get this stuff going and to create it.
Making a game is expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. And so time consuming. So,
I give you
all credit for it. But, you know, let's move on to your game, because here you are finishing a comic, you are creating two awesome books about it, and you're helping Josh with Nefarious, and then you're still working on Tadpole Treble.
That's right.
So,
a little bit of everything.
First of all, I mean, just in a general sense, I mean, how is the game coming along?
We're really happy with what we've accomplished over the past few months. I think... you know, we're currently in the middle of both adding the last kind of few levels that we required to pretty much have in the game that we want in the game, and also kind of alternating between that and polishing the general feel and look of the game, which goes kind of hand in hand with, you know, just visual effects, the way it feels to control Bataan. And we've even added like a new gameplay element recently, about 2 months ago, we started working on this kind of semi-invincibility feature that the player can activate if they do well enough for a limited amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the latest level is actually, it's kind of interesting because the further along we go with the game, the more complex the levels get, just because we kind of learn a little bit more about programming, a little bit more about art and what we can do in the game. And so we might think, oh, it'd be cool to have this and this, you know, have these spears come up out of the ground right here, you know, like Indiana Jones. And so we'll put those in a level, and I think we might need to go back and add a few more things to our earlier levels to kind of make them up to snuff with the latest ones we've been doing.
Sure. Well, that's awesome. So so it's good to hear that, you know, the game is definitely growing since the Kickstarter last year.
Yep.
And so are, you know, people working on it. I believe this was from your, Brawl in the Family podcast that I listened to, but, currently I think you're, or at least at the time of the recording, you were working on, kind of drawing the final boss and kind of planning how that's going to be.
Yes.
Yes. And so I was wondering when I was listening to that is, do you plan on having the boss be, the final boss be kind of a grand momentous moment in the same way that, like, you know, Bowser has been kind of a giant culmination of ideas at the end of Mario games, as opposed to maybe Donkey Kong Country, Tropical Freeze, where like the final boss was just like every other one, and then just kind of ended. I mean, not that it was necessarily a bad way to end the game, but I didn't really. And I think a big climax is always fulfilling for a gamer.
I would say our final boss is definitely, I guess, in a league of its own compared to the previous bosses.
Mm-hmm.
It's more ambitious, and it's something different, I guess you could say, compared to the rest of the game. So, I might say yes, because, we're currently figuring out all the programming involved to, you know, to make it work and everything. And, there's actually, some dialogue, which is not found anywhere else in the game. So, I guess that's about all I can say about that.
I wonder if the Great Mighty Pooh is coming back.
Great Mighty Pooh. Oh, man. That'd be a great final boss for a musical game, I think.
That would be pretty sweet. And, you know, I'm very curious to hear, you know, just what the music's going to sound like in that level. Because, you know, one thing with your game, you would expect the gameplay to amp up as the levels go on your, like you're saying. But the music probably... Not that, you know, it's basic, boring music from the start, but I mean, you want the music to kind of get a little bit, kind of to grow with everything else. And yeah, I'm excited to hear that climactic music.
Yeah, the music does get more intense as the game goes on. I mean, it needs to get more difficult for the player as well, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, it starts getting quicker. And the last boss is going to have, I think it has appropriate last boss music. I would have to say.
Fair enough. I'm not going to prod you for secrets and everything. Because if anyone at the boards knows me, I'm probably the annoying guy who loves the spoiler tag. I'd rather stay in the dark until I experience it, if I can. So, on the one hand, I want us to hear about your project. On the other hand, I want to hear nothing.
Until I play. Okay.
Let's jump to the last kind of curiosity I have with, you know, Tableau Trouble and how it's doing is the Wii U version. So... When we last visited the Kickstarter, the Kickstarter ended at $34,000, a little over $34,000, making its $30,000 goal.
Right.
However, the Wii U version was set for a $45,000 stretch goal. However, that also included PayPal, and you know, of course, we can't see that kind of tracking.
Right.
You know, you don't have to tell us how much you made via PayPal, of course, but. I mean, has it been a decent contribution to, I guess, all the campaigns? I mean, is it a useful tool?
The PayPal has been pretty useful for Brawl in the Family, but it's still, like, for Brawl in the Family, it's been, I think, less than, like, 2% of the total amount, even right now. So a pretty low percent. For Tadpole Trouble, there hasn't been a whole lot of PayPal. It pretty much stopped just a couple weeks after the campaign. So it wasn't a whole lot. We didn't quite make that goal with PayPal, but that said, I think we can have a definitive answer before the end of Brawl in the Family.
Oh, cool.
So okay. It's definitely something we've been looking into. But we're actually going to address that pretty soon, within a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome.
Sounds good.
You almost heard it here first.
The
nice thing about having a game come out on PC or Mac first is because most everybody who contributes to the Kickstarter has one of those things, and hence that's how it happened.
Right.
So it's kind of a safe bet. But if you're able to pull off a Wii U version, I think that's where I would like to play it. Honestly, even if you didn't have any sort of touchpad functionality, considering, you know, you're a budding new developer, I wouldn't expect you to dive into the nitty-gritty of the hardware per se, but I would still prefer to play it on my TV and on the Wii and support Nintendo like I can, and so it'd be cool. Right. But you know what, I'm gonna play it on Mac at the very least. So
cool.
And actually, yeah, you've got it planned for mobile devices too, right?
That's kind of in the cards, but that's something else we're not 100% sure on yet.
Well, I mean, that's a tough realm for anything, honestly, because there's so many variants.
Yeah, and I mean, not just that, but just translating the gameplay into a fully touch control without blocking the action, specifically. Yeah.
If anyone wants to know what that'd be like, play like Sonic 2 on your iPhone and have fun with that. It's true. Going to strictly touch screen can be tricky, which is why Nintendo has all sorts of buttons on its tablet controller, you know.
Yeah.
But it's cool that you're considering it anyway. And yeah. Good luck.
Thanks.
So okay, let's see. We have a little bit more I wanted to ask about this stuff. Really, I just want to know, what would you tell any young budding game developers, comic artists, anyone? I guess anyone in general. But what would you tell them if they wanted to kind of kick their passion and take it mainstream to a Kickstarter? Is there any like general advice or things that you've learned by doing three of them now?
One of the first ones was something I've already touched upon, where just make sure you have all your expenses sorted out, especially shipping costs. And like that, something that goes hand in hand with that is if you can do something digital, you know, digitally, it's usually a better idea to do it like that so you don't have to worry about shipping costs. But I think on a more general scale, if you're planning on making a Kickstarter, it's a little tricky. I'm trying to think of something to say that would be useful because I was fortunate enough to have this established fan base already. But I would say if you don't have an established fan base, it's a great idea to just kind of go in with a plan, kind of planning on where you're going to get your backers, where you're going to advertise, and what people you can reach, you know. I'm assuming most people that listen to this are at least members of Negative World, the forum, or at least they should be. So, you know, that's a great place to start. But if you're looking for, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for like a game, for instance, you're definitely going to need some pretty heavy, pretty heavy push somehow. Mm. So make sure you have that before trying it. And well, I guess like Steve said, you know, if you just want to try to focus on the Kickstarter itself, make sure you put all the effort into the rewards and the assets in the Kickstarter and everything like that, so people will know that you're serious about it, that mm-hmm. that you've got a passion behind it. I'm trying to think. I feel like it's unfortunate because I can't give advice on the kind of the biggest first hurdle, which would be having that audience, you know?
Well, that's your advice, is to get an audience before you do a Kickstarter.
Well, yeah. I mean, get an audience. I mean, it's advice, you know, but I don't know how to go about accomplishing that exact.
Well, what you made me think of when you were saying that is, you know, you kind of do luck out a little bit trying to make a game or make the comic into a book because it's already a communications medium. Mm-hmm. Whether you play all by yourself, alone in a room, you're still kind of experiencing some sort of exchange of communication with that game and with the artists. And right. if you're someone who is crocheting and you want to build a whole, you know, crochet DDD dolls, you know, which would be pretty cool, wink, wink. if you wanted to do that, that's a bit harder because there isn't some sort of communication inherent in the doll. It's not something mm. that naturally communicates. Films, I think, can do pretty well because likely those directors and actors can go to YouTube or they can go to other mediums and just show off the product right then and there. And they can communicate that. They can go to, there's other things set up for that. I mean, there's a lot less crochet clubs with mass mm-hmm. fan bases and stuff like that. So,
right.
The potato salad guy, I don't know how he did it. I don't think there's a potato salad club, but,
I think in his case, it's really, just a pretty simple idea that it was kind of a right place at the right time thing where it's just this really goofy kind of funny idea that was presented well in terms of humor mm-hmm. that other people wanted in on the joke, you know, because it right. would be funny to support this potato salad thing and see it get to be a huge amount.
Right. So, and that's what you're paying for, essentially.
Is yeah. Yeah. And joke. Interestingly, I thought that the long length of time for that Kickstarter actually heard it because for a little while it was at like 80,000-90,000 and then people, you know, a few weeks later are like, do I really want to pledge a couple $100 to this Kickstarter at this point? You know, and they're like, oh, okay, maybe not, you know, and I think it ended up being like 50,000, which is nothing to sneeze at, obviously, for potato salad.
Right.
But it did
lose a lot.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people were like, okay, the joke's kind of run its course by now, you know, cause it was like a month later. Yeah. So, but still, I mean, if you have this completely original idea like that, you never know. You know, you could get a huge following just for the lulls of it, as they say.
Cook up some success.
Yes, you could cook up some success. Thank you.
See what you did there.
Yeah.
Those are the words I was grasping for right there.
Yeah, it served you guys a plate of pun.
Heaping plate of pun. Very nice.
You know, this isn't really related to anything I just asked, but there was one Kickstarter I noticed a few weeks ago that just kind of failed every single thing we've suggested here, especially starting with a kind of coherent, legitimate thought or, like, idea. It was this couple a man and a woman, and they wanted people to fund them to buy like a bunch of old consoles and like 20 different games that they listed off that weren't necessarily even the popular ones, but just probably rare ones. And then they would sit down and play them, and then they would tell you who's better at video games, men or women. And I was like, nobody's going to give you any money. Like, that's, I mean, and not only did they, I mean, if they had presented it in kind of some really exciting way, I could see people actually being interested in this, but they just literally had nothing but like, it really came off like, we just want you to fund our retro game habit. And, so that's not the way to go.
Can I see a link to that, or does that have a name or anything?
I had to look it up a little bit, but I could probably find it again. So, okay. I'll try to find it after the show.
Okay, sure.
And I think Kickstarters don't really delete themselves, right? I mean,
no, they don't, unless you cancel it halfway through. I think it'll.
Okay, because yeah, I was looking through. I searched Nintendo on Kickstarter just to see what was showing up besides your stuff, and I could see a lot of failed ones, especially with like chiptune music and stuff like that. Ones that just didn't reach it. So I was thinking that yeah, they don't really get rid of them, but
yeah, that's true.
So okay, my last general question, and we'll move on to some non-Matthew related stuff. I was curious if you could put any influence from your comic, whether it's a character you created or something else, into the upcoming Smash games. What would you pick?
Oh man,
would it be a stage? Your music? You know, what would you do? Because a Brawl in the Family Fighter would be pretty sweet. But
that would be pretty cool. You know, part of me wants to say that like, I don't deserve my own character, but it would be cool if there was some sort of character that's more popular because of Brawl in the Family, like Adelaine, or even Waluigi, dare I suggest.
That would be pretty great if the Waluigi in Smash Brothers for Wii U 3DS was the one that you've drawn.
That would be so weird.
That would be awesome.
I'm kind of tempted to say Adelaine from the Kirby series, just because... I ended up having a soft spot for that character. She fit kind of a nice little niche in the comic, and she was from Kirby 64, and I think she just kind of fits in with Kirby, DDD, and Meta Knight as like this fourth character.
I was gonna bring her up when we were talking a little while ago about characters that you've kind of kept in the spotlight that, you know, Nintendo doesn't really do that for, but because I actually just got to play Kirby 64 for the first time, I think, over the summer.
Oh, okay.
And so I had, of course, seen the character in and around your website and in your work and everything. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, maybe sort of, had it in the back of my head that this was a Kirby character and everything. But, yeah, so it actually gave a new dimension to when I was playing the Kirby 64 game this summer, and for me it was almost more like, oh, that's the character from Brawl in the Family.
Well, cool. Yeah, because I mean that's really the only game she's appeared in. And that character, I had drawn her for like a couple comics early on, and she ended up just kind of fitting this sort of nice spot in like the Brawl in the Family roster, because she was kind of earnest and friendly and didn't really have like a rivalry. Which the other, like Kirby, Meta Knight, and DDD were all kind of had their own little, like, issues with one or two of each other, you know? And she was just kind of buddies with them. So, it kind of made it easier to work her into stories and to have her kind of as this friend to several characters. And, I just kind of always liked her in Kirby 64, and I thought it'd be cool if she showed up again. So, I don't know. She could have a painting move set in Smash Brothers or something. That'd be neat.
Yeah. Okay, awesome answer. I still like my idea of everything, and then it just being its own game. But,
wow!
that would be pretty sweet. Well, you could do one like Comic Zone, but it's your comics. You know what I mean?
Oh.
That'd be pretty badass.
Yeah, I think I'd like that.
I know there's a lot of people listening to this right now.
So.
Yeah, that was a pretty awesome game. You know.
I'll say when I played it in a Walmart or wherever it was at the time, I was like, man, this is so 90s tacular in a good way.
Yeah, I guess I admit I can't guarantee it has aged well, but I remember loving it quite so. My cousin had it, and I think you can get it on the at least the Wii U or the Wii eShop. I'm not sure if it's on the Wii U one, but
yeah, I think it is on the Wii one.
Man, I need to pick that up then.
Genesis VC.
But yeah. Yeah, any of the Genesis kids from the recent episode, I'm sure love it. True. So we had a bunch of them on recently. But okay, so let's move on to a classic section of the Negative World podcast. It's What Do You Think?
All right.
Which has
Do
no
you think?
What has no theme song or anything. I just say it funny. you know, as you probably know, this is just where we kind of go through some questions really quickly to see all of our reactions to them, typically based on things in the forums. And that's pretty much what I pulled these from. So,
okay.
First off, is something that I actually made last night as I was editing the last podcast. I realized I had $6.24 on my 3DS eShop credits. So I went through as I was listening to the show, and I picked out, I think, like 8 games that I thought, hey, this might be interesting, even though I'm not sure if I'd want it. So I'm going to read them off to you. You tell me what you think I should buy with my $6.24. We have Kirby's Dream Land 2, Shantae, the original, Blaster Master, Castlevania 3, The Mysterious Murasame Castle, Ika-chan, Super Mario Bros. 3, Harvest Moon on the Game Boy Color, or I should just save my money for Picross E5, which should be coming out soon because it's being rated by the European Board of Game Ratings or whatever. Whatever it's called. So.
Well, I have my pick. Should I? Who wants to go first?
Yeah, you can go first. I've been talking a lot lately.
I will say, though, that I have played Super Mario Bros. 3. These aren't necessarily... I mean, I haven't played anything except for Mario Bros. 3. But it was on there and it looked like it would be fun again, so that's why it's there. But the rest I have not played before.
Is this the NES Blaster Master that we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Then that is going to be my pick. Have you played that game before?
I think I played it for like 2 seconds a long time ago.
Okay, that was not long enough.
And I didn't. Yeah, I didn't get it. I was like, why is this fun? And then I just didn't play it, you know. It could have very well been like a ROM experience from college. I don't even remember when or how I played it, but I've thought about it. And well, would you Okay, if I was to get that, would you recommend it for the 3DS? Because I don't tend to enjoy NES games on the smaller screen with the controls of the 3DS. I like having an actual controller and everything. Will that affect me?
Well, here's the thing: it is a very difficult game. Or at least in my opinion, is a very difficult game. Matthew, have you played Blaster Master NES?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, it's tough.
Would you concur? Yeah. I think back, you know, in its time, I don't know that I beat the second boss back in the day, you know, but it was also back in the days when you just get together with your friends and you were playing video games. It didn't matter if you didn't get anywhere. But so I would definitely say that it's a game that will probably... test your patience, but I would say in a good way. It's just a challenging game. So definitely make sure that you are on a platform that you're going to be like, you know, like comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or if I play it on 3DS, just glue a wrist strap to it so I cannot lose it when I throw it.
Yeah, could be a good idea. I don't know if I would say that it was like a frustrating...
Is it a fair difficulty?
I think so. It's very high, but it's but like you'll know what you're doing wrong. I think it like the bosses. It's mostly the boss fights, in my opinion. So you know they have patterns, and it'll be predictable. It's just a matter of you being able to overcome it. So when things go wrong, when you die, you'll know why. It's not like cheap, I don't think.
Okay.
It's just very difficult.
All right. And, Matt?
I think I saw your thread on this, but I could not make a decision. Now, you've not played Kirby's Dream Land 2 before, right?
No, I did complete Kirby's Adventure recently, for some reason. I thought it was like a Negative World thing, but I did complete it, and I do own Kirby's Dream Land on the Game Boy in the actual cart, and I think I did beat that before, but it was so long ago I can't remember. But I've never All played right. the second one, no.
What did you think of Kirby's Adventure?
I was kind of excited for it to be done.
How dare you?
Wow.
How dare you, sir?
Yep.
So I could play it again. No. you know, I've always had such a weird relationship with Kirby games because I love the character, I love the music, I like the aesthetic. But the games just never seem to grip me. And I worry that, like, I've just felt that way for so long that I can't come out of it. So that's why I still find myself intrigued by Kirby games. And actually, I'm gonna probably buy that new one that has like the clay aesthetic, because it looks pretty fun and the graphics look nice. And I think I need to pull myself out of this elitism that I have going on with the Kirby series. And so with Kirby's Dream Land 2, the artwork that's probably from the manual, but or the box, but the artwork that's on the eShop actually looked really adorable and fun. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, that has to be a first pick on this poll here.
It's a nice looking game. I would say if you didn't really like Adventure all that much, you probably are not going to like Dream Land 2 as much.
Okay.
Dream Land 2, it keeps the abilities kind of that you can get from Adventure, but it adds these animal helper buddies, which is kind of fun. But structurally, the game is very similar to Adventure in that you have the doors that you go into in the world map, and then you kind of have these mostly linear stages with some minor puzzle solving. I like it, but it's not really my favorite Kirby game, and I think most people that like it also like Adventure quite a bit. So,
see, I'm gonna be a person who does not fit that, because Adventure is still probably my favorite Kirby game, which I don't know what that says about all the games made since, but I just love it that much. But the ones with the animal friends are, I would say, at the bottom of my list. There's something about that mechanic that I don't know, just never really clicked with me. So, don't you feel it really, really changes the gameplay? Which for some might be a good thing, but
it's kind of interesting. I'm not going to go off on too long of a thing, but the Kirby series has kind of split. Like at this point, there's the Sakurai developed
two
ones,
timelines.
Which are there's two timelines. It's like Zelda. It's like a lot of lore there. No, there's Sakurai developed ones, which were made by, you know, Smash Brothers, Masahiro Sakurai guy. He did Kirby's Dream Land, Kirby's Adventure, and Kirby Superstar. And those games kind of have a set number, like, those games kind of have, like, Meta Knight, and they have kind of these other big bosses and stuff. The other games in the series, Dream Land 2, 3, and 64, are all kind of part of their own trilogy. They're made by a different director, and they don't have, like, Meta Knight, but they have other characters. They've got, like, Adelaine in one of them. They've got the animal friends. So it's kind of almost two different, like, series, like New Super Mario Brothers versus Mario Galaxy. I mean, not that extreme, obviously. And I think, generally, I prefer the Sakurai ones. Some people do prefer the Dream Land 2, 3, and 64 ones. I find them a little bit slower paced, personally. But, I mean, I like Kirby in general, obviously. But yeah, that's kind of might be why Dream Land 2 kind of feels so different for you than Adventure. Mm-hmm.
That was a good way to break it down.
Yeah, it's kind of it's kind of quirky. Okay, I should answer this question though. I've never played Shantae. Blaster Master is pretty good. It's kind of tough. Castlevania 3 is also good but tough.
Yep.
Murasame Castle, I'm kind of in the middle of that. I kind of wish I liked it a little bit more than I do, because I love old school NES games and I love Legend of Zelda. But I'm still kind of trying to love this one, so I'm going to give it a little more time. Mario 3 you already own. I don't know if you need it on the DS with, like, worse buttons. And Harvest Moon on Game Boy Color. I like Harvest Moon on Game Boy Color, but it doesn't have the dating element. And I, personally, that's kind of a big part of the draw for me.
Interesting. So, dating. I mean, you dated in the original, right?
You dated on the Super Nintendo one, yeah. The Game Boy Color one, I think, was the second Harvest Moon game ever made.
I think so.
And I think that's one of the elements that they had to scale down for the handheld. It's possible I'm confusing this with the Game Boy one. I'm not sure if there was one on the vanilla Game Boy. But I would recommend checking on that if the dating element is important to you. Otherwise, I mean, it's good farming. So my pick actually might be Save It for Picross E5, because I love Picross.
Oh, yeah. I eat that up like nothing else. Yeah, I mean, it's probably my favorite puzzle game that Nintendo's produced.
Yeah.
Even more so than Dr. Mario, which I love. But
Nice.
But okay, so we have Blaster Master or Save It for Picross E5. I do have some free eShop credits, so maybe I should just do both of those options.
Okay. Hmm.
We'll see, because actually I think the poll was going towards Murasame Castle. So I don't know, maybe I just need to buy everything I suggested. Okay, so moving on to the next question. This one I just saw before we started the show. What game do you wish you could play for the first time again? which is a like a Keanu Reeves kind of like whoa moment, you know.
it's a little bit like kind of a what's your favorite game style kind of question, or like what's a great game experience?
Yeah, I came up with an answer pretty quick, but
yeah, you go ahead. I'm gonna have to reflect on this.
And this is probably so like oh of course you know, but Ocarina of Time. Because
oh of course
like oh no because my brain instantly went to N64 for some reason, and I think that's because I was at an age where I was just starting to understand games on a real level, and I was starting to form real memories with them, even though I had been playing games since I was playing on the NES back in 89. But something with the N64 really spoke to me as a I guess moving into my teen years and GoldenEye and all those kind of experiences with friends, maybe that's what it was. And even though Ocarina of Time isn't with friends, but I just remember the grand scale and the gravitas of a game like that. It was the first real 3D adventure game that just immersed you in like it did. And now you play it and you know what's going to happen, and the graphics don't necessarily amaze you. And I think it's harder to suspend your disbelief or kind of look at something and feel like it's bigger than it actually is. And the 3DS remake kind of helped with that a little bit, making the graphics a little bit nicer and everything. But if I could go back and just wipe my memory temporarily and go back and play that for the first time, not knowing what's around that corner in the Deku Tree or Deku Tree, you know, that kind of thing, I think it would be quite a great jovial experience. So that was my pick. But there were many good ones that in the thread already. Go ahead.
My mind kind of went there as well. I mean, that was one of the first things I thought of, just because I kind of had, I think a lot of people our age had kind of had that similar experience with Ocarina of Time, where it was just such a grandiose and massive kind of adventure. That might be my pick too. But at the same time, I'm also kind of thinking of games like, the third Phoenix Wright, actually, Trials and Tribulations. I remember being really invested in the story of that game. And that's one of the games that I've played where I just felt like the story was just so compelling and the characters were just really likable and interesting. I just couldn't wait to see what happened next to them. So it was really addictive in the sense that not because of the gameplay, but because I didn't know where the story was going to go. And yeah. So that's kind of unusual for Nintendo fans, you know, like they don't get a ton of games that have super compelling stories. So I think I would want to experience that again just for the sake of not knowing, you know, these big twists and stuff, because I remember the end of that game kind of blew my mind a little bit.
Yeah, when it comes to the story aspect, I think, not to cheat by saying more than one game, but I think the Bioshock series, or at least the first one, would be a really great game to re-experience, even though I just did just a few years ago. But I mean, and just last year I experienced The Walking Dead by Telltale, but that's such a story-driven game. You know, it was so wonderful not to know anything of what was going to happen next to my characters. And, maybe there's two facets that are kind of the same sometimes, but story or, just your own personal experience.
Yeah.
But, Joe?
Well, obviously this question goes somewhat hand in hand with
the last one, Kirby.
Asking like, but just asking like, what is your favorite game? So, I'm sure I've said on the podcast before, my favorite game still is Final Fantasy VII, which is not even on a Nintendo platform. but I think also part of this question is as you've already both touched on, is that story element. So that game definitely lends itself to being the answer to this question as well, because that was a game that. Man, I was actually just telling someone about my experiences with that game just yesterday, which is kind of crazy. But it was really the first game where I remember thinking like, you know, up until then, games, as far as when you would compare them to other media, they would kind of be good like for a game, you know, like like Blaster Master is really awesome for a video game, you know, but with Final Fantasy VII, I remember thinking that you know there had been this leap forward where it was like this medium can stand up on its own, and you know movies are now irrelevant. Or no, I didn't think that, but that experience was really, you know, really took me aback and really made me stop and ponder what this crazy video game medium could do. So if I could experience that all over again for the first time, that'd probably be the best one I can think of.
Okay. So the next step is to get that game out, do a ton of drugs, and go for it.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Totally do that.
Negative World podcast, Negative World, and none of us advocate drugs.
Nope.
So anyway, now that the disclaimer's out of the way, next question, are you guys picking up Hyrule Warriors?
I think I'm going to get Hyrule Warriors eventually, but probably not right away. I think it might... It's kind of one of those games that would be like a good gift, you know? Like, I'd be really happy to get it like as a Christmas gift from someone.
But just not giving hints to yourself
on our podcast.
Oh, there we go. Hint, hint. Yeah, but yeah, maybe not. You know, right away. I played it at E3 and I liked it, but it felt a little willy nilly with the gameplay, to be honest.
And have you not played the Dynasty Warriors games before?
I have not. I'm actually speaking from the perspective of someone that's a big fan of Zelda, but I've never played Dynasty Warriors.
Right, and that's where I'm coming from too.
All right,
Joe.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to get it. I will probably get it when it comes out because I have some GameStop gift cards that people gave me for my birthday. And I kind of, like, I set one aside for Bayonetta 2 and I set one aside for Hyrule Warriors. So I don't know if I'm going to get to play it until probably, like, Christmas break. But, yeah, I do plan to pick it up when it comes out. So, right. Yeah, I got sold on it probably... But by the time Sheik was announced, it was all over. It was a foregone conclusion. So, what about you, Steven?
Yeah, I was really in kind of Matthew's camp as far as just not knowing what to make of the gameplay. I mean, you actually got to, I think, experience some of it at E3, but I've just been kind of like, all right, well, what is this? And people keep telling me that Dynasty Warriors isn't really that great of a game or a series, that it's not that engaging. But I finally sat down like a couple weeks after the Nintendo Direct focused on the Hyrule Warriors game came out, mm-hmm. and I watched it and I was blown away by just like all the fan service and how how beautiful the game looked, how much fun it looked. And even though it was maybe a little bit going to be on the easy side because there wasn't too much opposition, I'm sure that there is some in there, and maybe it'll never reach the level that I'm wanting, but hey, the Kirby games don't either, so maybe this will help me kind of get used to games that, you know, are just more about just the fun kind of relax factor and less about the challenge or, you know, how am I going to die in this turn, that kind of thing. And I don't mean that as a slight... Yeah, and I don't mean that as a slight to Kirby or the game or Hyrule Warriors, but genuinely trying to open my mind up a little bit to those games. And then they talked about the gameplay being... a bit more tactical and how eventually, you know, some of your teammates on the field might say, oh, hey, come help me over here. Or they might even run off the field and leave you. And that there's a lot of things going on in the battle at once. It's not just focused where you're at and you have to make your way over to people and that bosses can show up out of nowhere. And then the fact that they're, I guess I'm going to a whole rant that I shouldn't be doing so. In other words, yes. I will be day one because... I kind of took care of a lot of backlog games too, so I'm kind of open right now.
Oh, okay.
And and since Smash Bros. Has to be slightly delayed for me because of my whole stupid Georgia thing, I'm not going to be able to play that right away, so I'm going to need something to soak my tears up. And Hyrule Warriors, without the scarf, though, that would soak it up even better. But
I know,
damn Nintendo World Store, which I love, but hate. Because I think they're supposed to get a limited amount of those special editions, but that's it. So,
I really was thinking like trying to do the math on like would it be worth it to drive down and you know,
if it was guaranteed, yeah, then maybe. But right. Since I don't even know if you'd be able to get there and then actually get a copy, I don't think it would be worth
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I've gone to the Nintendo World Store many times back when I lived in New York and. It's a lovely store, but I've been stuck in some lines before just to pick up Pokemon, and just not for anything special, just to pick it up that day. And so I can imagine the line for this being crazy and not being worth it, unless you just really want to spend a lot of time and maybe money, you know, on gas just for street passes. But
nope.
Yep, exactly. So just go to your local Best Buy and do the whole thing that they do, you know, when you go into the network or just... tags people. So
yeah,
works just as well. Okay, so last question, really quickly, what is your most anticipated thing you're looking forward to with the Smash Bros. 3DS? Because that's coming out very soon.
Oh man!
So that's right. Pick one most anticipated, you must, and tough shit. You know, it's a hard question.
It's tough. I've been kind of absorbing all this stuff from this game over the past year and a half by now.
It's been getting really much more feverish lately with the leak and with Nintendo kind of stepping up, I think, their pick of the days and things like that. So, yeah, there's a lot going on.
Well, I'm not going to say who it is, but there is one character from the leak I'm pretty excited about.
Okay.
But besides that, I'm actually really excited to play as Mega Man.
Yeah, well, I hear you've been getting a lot of that in.
Yeah, I love Mega Man. You know, I loved him at E3, and it was just kind of the most exciting Smash Brothers character reveal for me, like, ever.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me too. I mean, my nephew, who knows nothing of Mega Man, I was showing him videos. I had my computer plugged into my HDTV, and I was showing him some of the reveals, and he watched the Mega Man one, like, 4 times. He just thought it was so cool. So nice. I get it. Now, let me ask you this really quick, because I love talking about the leak, but not actually knowing anything about it. So,
okay, sure.
The character that you're talking about, are they a recurring character, or like a newcomer? A newcomer or a returning?
Well, there's a returning character that I'm, like, really excited for, but it's like I didn't expect to go away. So the character I was actually talking about was a newcomer.
Okay, all right. Answer me this, too. This isn't really talking about the leak too much, but is there of the characters revealed in the leak, which supposedly was the remainder of the roster, right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Or is there still some ambiguity with that?
There's some ambiguity because people are thinking there's going to be DLC because the leak had, like, the character select screen didn't really look uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like a big rectangle. There were, like, it wasn't asymmetrical, but it was kind of laid out a little weird, which made people think there would be a few characters either released via DLC or possibly after the Wii U version came out, they might unlock in the 3DS version.
Right. Which would be really nice.
So that's still a mystery. Yeah. That would be really nice, because if not, there's actually some cuts that are really heartbreaking to me.
Right.
We're going to get to play as a Mercedes-Benz, right?
Oh, yeah.
No, if Wario comes back, he'll have a Mercedes-Benz instead of his motorcycle. You know?
Interesting.
What was I going to say? So of the elite characters, the elite roster, were a majority of them returning or newbies?
Most of them are returning.
Okay. There's not that many new potentials out there.
There's a handful, but I would expect the proportion to be similar to Brawl's unlockable characters.
Okay.
Which had a few newcomers and more veterans.
Yeah. I mean, there's quite a few newcomers already announced. I mean, it's not like there's a lack of them or anything.
Yeah.
So, okay. All right, Joe?
Are we strictly talking the 3DS version right now?
I figured, yeah, but I mean, they're almost the same thing.
Well, I'll just say that the single best thing I've heard about the 3DS version is that Game Boy stage.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be awesome. I mean, as someone, that was my first video game playing device that I ever owned, spent a good many hours with my Game Boy, and so there's a lot of warm, fuzzy, nostalgic feelings just about, you know, that stupid green screen and that little red light on the battery and stuff. So, yeah.
Okay. Maybe they'll release one of those magnifiers for the 3DS just so you can play the level the right way.
With
a front lit. So my answer, which would probably be everything, but I'm really excited to unlock more trophies and break more blue squares and accomplish goals, because that's what I really got hooked in with Brawl, was just unlocking all that stuff.
Yeah.
And trying not to use the hammers and stuff. I actually went through and almost did every single one of those again, like, last year, because I was just bored and I was like, I want to do that again. I know. Obviously, the ones like play 20 hours of Brawl I didn't do, because I didn't commit myself to that. But I did as much as I could within like a 5 to 6 hour Well, I guess it'd be more than that, but try to go through with every mode with every character and on the harder difficulties and stuff like that. So I love that stuff, and looking forward to
it. I remember we didn't know how intense some of the those challenges were going to get, so we only did it with one, but we definitely used one hammer just kind of on a whim one time without realizing that you really, should save them because...
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
No,
there were some tough ones in there.
I don't quite remember this, but were there some that you couldn't use the hammers on at all?
Yeah, there were some where if you tried to use them, the hammer would just kind of bounce off harmlessly. Yeah, yeah. And those were, of course, some of the toughest ones, like beat boss battles on intense, I'm pretty sure, is one of those.
I think that's bullshit, personally.
The hammers break it all, yeah. I guess, I don't know what the design decision behind that was.
Even if they, I mean, let them leave the hammer in there disheveled with pieces of glass. Like, let it be known that I broke the thing and I didn't earn it for real. I just to be able to actually open everything up would still be worth it to me. And I think that boss battles on intense and maybe the all-star on intense. No, I think it was just the boss battles that was really the tough one for me that I never could do. Mm. I ran out of hammers, so maybe it was pointless because maybe I couldn't use it.
But yeah,
I always wished I had used one on that though, because I did, just like Joe just said, I did use one kind of frivolously on an easier one, not realizing that it wasn't as hard as I thought.
The two hardest I remember I don't even remember what the challenge was, but I just remember I had never really used Pokemon Trainer up till that time. And I just remember spamming the Rock Smash with Charizard for just to get through it. And I don't remember, maybe it was boss battles or something. And then the other hardest one was, there was one, remember, where you just had to like survive for 15 minutes or something like that.
And you typically use Pit.
That's amazing.
Yes, just use Pit and just fly around like a weenie. Yeah. That was the only way I could do
it. But, I mean, the way that everyone seemed to do it that way is if like that was the way to do it. Like, that right. was almost the design, you know?
I can't imagine how outright skilled you would have to be to do it a more legit way. But there was a real intensity about it. Like, I remember doing that, and, like, Amy sitting next to me is, you know, the timer is getting to, like, 14 and a half minutes.
Yeah,
and
your palms
are swelling. This is going to be it. And then, you make that, like, one bad swoop or something, and your heart stops. And
Yeah, I mean, one bad swoop or just the enemy is just at the right spot, the right time to knock you off or something or hit you. It almost does something that's not like it's supposed to be programmed, but it does it anyway. And that was tense. I remember I think I had to pause during my first attempt through, or not the very first, but as I was before I actually achieved it. I remember like pausing like 30 seconds to go, and I was like, okay, I gotta finish this, you know. I think the 3DS one's supposed to be slightly easier than the Wii U ones, is what they said, and so that's another reason I'm anticipating it, because it seems like, okay, you're going to be more my level of what I, you know, can do. So so we'll see. But with that said, let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about our last topic of the evening, which is going to be the new 3DS. The final segment of the episode 69 of Negative World Podcast, and we're going to talk about what was quite a surprise, I think, for everybody. Let's see, when was this announced? It was announced right at the end of August, so maybe like a week and a half ago or something. There's a new 3DS coming out, and it's called It's the new one. If that wasn't clear enough, let me be a little bit more articulate. It's the new one. not capitalized though. It's just new. It's a little more subtle new, you know. There are a lot of new features about it. It's part of Nintendo's on the nose branding, and just like Smash Brothers 3DS and Smash Brothers for Wii U. the Wii U in general is kind of like that too. But yeah, I don't know. I should have checked this out beforehand, but I don't know how much in size they are different. I think the screens might be, I think the XL version screens are the same size, but the system might be a little bit different. And then the 3DS one, I think, did get a slight bump. Did it not?
I think so. Yeah. I think, yeah, like the smaller size has slightly bigger screens than mm-hmm. the smaller original 3DS, but then yeah. I think the XL models are much more similar.
Yeah, so some things like adding ZL and ZR buttons, so now there's four triggers, which is kind of an amazing thing to add to the system.
How do you guys feel about the location of those extra buttons? You're kind of going to have to like wrap your finger around to reach them, right?
Wait, where are they again?
Well, they're up next to where the shoulder buttons are on a 3DS right now, they're just moved in further.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be something that I'm going to have to try out myself. It doesn't look very intuitive, but I don't know.
I mean, actually, like, I feel
it
like...
looks better. It possible it feels better than it looks.
Yeah, you know, I'm holding my system right now, and where my fingers rest, they do sit quite comfortably just where they're at. They don't stretch out farther to reach anything. So that might be a little weird. You kind of have to cup the system a bit more.
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, you know, if you've got like adult-sized hands, probably just reaching them is not going to be a problem. But I'm kind of wondering how I'm going to not hit the other button, you know, the normal L and R, I guess, in the process. You know, you're going to have to like reach up and over or something. But we'll see how it goes.
They're pretty close though to the R and L buttons, so maybe it won't be so bad. They look also slightly raised, so maybe you won't have to push them in as far. It could be more intuitive. I don't know. I guess we have to really see. But it's a good question, and unfortunately none of us are going to get to know this for quite a while. This isn't going to come out in America till 2015. I think it is coming out in Japan this holiday, though, right?
I thought so.
I think it is.
Yeah,
I think like October or something like that.
Yeah, pretty soon. I think almost in time with Smash Brothers, but obviously they're getting Smash Brothers a little bit earlier. Some of the things that that are in this model are the faster eShop speeds, which I think is not with the eShop itself, but it sounds like it's just because the processor in the 3DS is better.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Because they showed, I mean, it was in Japanese, the video, you know, the direct, so it was kind of hard to tell, but they definitely focus on the eShop as being speedier, and I don't if it is just the eShop, I don't see why that can't be the same on every system. But
right. How bad would it be if they are just throttling it down for older models?
Jeez, that would be horrible.
No, there's no way they're doing that. But yeah, so it's got to just be because I know they've said that there's a little bit beefier horsepower going on with this system. So
well, and that'll lead me into one of the more controversial upgrades, which I'll mention in a second. But another thing that I thought was pretty cool that is almost a reason for me to want the system, because I don't know if they're coming to the regular 3DS, but themes in your like menus and everything. So like a wallpaper or, well, I guess, yeah, wallpapers or icons and stuff like that. So you can have a Mario block for an icon or a folder. That's kind of sweet.
Yeah, I thought that Link Between Worlds one looked really good.
Yeah, especially because it's like both screens. And
I'm excited for the inevitable Smash one.
Oh yeah, for sure. It'd be kind of cool if you can make your own, which would be nice too. Maybe not the icons, but at least the background.
Is the desktop like background thing? Is that for just the new 3DS, or is that for both of them?
That's what I don't know. I know it's only featured in the new 3DS's art and everything in the release materials, but since we haven't really had an official US announcement, I haven't been able to translate or find anything out about that.
I would guess it would be rolled out for all of them.
I mean, unless it's tied to that damn processor, but I don't see why it would.
Right.
I mean, is the 3DS processor really so bad that it can't handle a wallpaper? You know, a scrolling wallpaper?
Yeah.
Which actually, I don't think scrolls either. I think icons just work like normal, so it's just a wallpaper. So it's probably capable, but it could be something that they lock behind the new one to make it more
interesting. As a selling point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a preemptive dick move, Nintendo. But, you know, and that leads me into the more controversial upgrades, which unfortunately it seems like there's more of. For instance, the second analog mini stick, which is a cool feature. But I guess on games that use the CC Pro or whatever it is, what is that called? Is that what it is?
Circle Pad Pro.
Yeah. You know, they don't necessarily inherently work together. And of course, games like Xenoblade Chronicles, which I thought was really cool to see that coming out for 3DS. That was quite a surprise, and it's great for anyone who hasn't played it yet. But it won't work with the circle pad, and instead it'll just require the nub. And in fact, it'll only require the nub, because you can't play that game on non-new systems. You know, I wasn't going to jump into that just yet, but I know, Joe, you and I have had spirited conversations about this, and we have differing opinions. There's that big risk and fear of the fan base being divided.
Right.
And I guess I'm looking on the bright side of thinking, like, well, maybe they never would have done it in the first place, so this is how it's got to be, to have certain games that require more advanced camera control or whatever Xenoblade really needs, or maybe just the processor in general. But then again, yeah, they could always have released one with a better processor and that still had the same functionality. But even then, would the games, I don't know, would they dumb down games to work with the older 3DS? I feel like it kind of has to happen. And I feel like, I don't know, I can't see them making too many awesome games come out for just it right now, because they still want to make, I mean, they don't want to make the next Mario only for it, because then they're going to lose a lot of money. So it might just be for certain special instances, but there is that risk. And I wouldn't put it past Nintendo to pull a stunt like that to make, you know, Mario Galaxy 3 come out on the 3DS and you need that better processor.
Right. The only thing that I really, because yeah, as we've talked about, I want to feel comfortable in the purchases that I'm making, and I want to feel like there's that sort of unspoken agreement between myself and the manufacturer of, like, okay, I'm going to plunk down these couple $100, and what I'm getting is the ability to play your games for a certain number of years, you know, and obviously that's going to vary, and but you know, we've sort of established some standards, you know, somewhere between 4 to 6 years for some of these platforms. But one thing that's making me not too worried about this is I remember having similar fears when the DSi came out, as opposed to the DS Lite and the original DS, and some people were saying, you know, oh, you know, it's got this other functionality, and so there's going to be certain games that are going to use the camera and stuff. And I remember at that time being really concerned that this was going to be a split in the market, or that was going to be a real barrier keeping me from the games I wanted to play, and it just never turned out that way. So yeah, obviously there'll be some games that require it, but I, you know, it remains to be seen, and I'm trying not to panic too much about you know, how much of a divide or how much of a barrier there will be. Plus, they've shown me enough that I'm gonna get it anyway, so I guess I don't really need to worry about not being able to play those games. So there you go.
Has Nintendo ever really had this kind of issue? I mean, I know it's something that we've feared in the past, but like the expansion pack in the N64 didn't really go too far, even though some great games required it, like Perfect Dark and Donkey Kong, you know, 64, which is a great game, damn it. I don't care who's listening. You know, so only a few games use that. The N64 DD never really came into fruition. Nintendo's had a lot of failed add-on enhancing kind of consoles that just don't go anywhere. I feel like they're not stupid enough to shoot themselves in the foot like this. Of course, there will be exclusive content to make it enticing to own one, but I don't think it'll be as big of a scare as it might feel right now. What do you think, Matthew?
I feel like, I kind of feel like this kind of falls in line with that precedent of, like you guys said, the 64 DD, the expansion pack, the Game Boy Color, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the DSi. I don't think they're going to put too much behind it in terms of exclusive games. I mean, I could be wrong, you know, but just based on the way they've handled things like this in the past, if I had to guess, I would say we're probably going to see stuff like Xenoblade Chronicles and maybe a few other Wii ports be like kind of the system's exclusives. Because unless this thing does like really well in terms of the marketplace, I don't know if they'd want to just lock out that established, like, how many people have a 3DS by now? Like, I don't know, it's several million.
I think it's officially a shit ton.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. I mean, you locked out all those guys from playing, you know, whatever game is next. So, I mean, just I don't think they're going to put too much stock into exclusive games. But that's just my guess, you know. Anything could happen.
Well, in that sense, too, maybe it's a stopgap because, you know, we keep hearing that they're supposed to kind of mesh the two worlds together, the consoles and handhelds, more and more. Yeah. And if you up the power and you start doing ports of games like this, maybe that gets people used to and also sees how the waters are as far as going that route. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe then with the new true handheld console, it'll be more of a real step up and then they'll be able to kind of continue on that path to a greater degree with new games as opposed to ports.
Yeah.
I think it's cool because it gives us a chance to see Xenoblade in 3D. Which
yeah, that is cool.
After that was one of the puzzle panels, I was so excited to see that in 3D. I was like, oh, that'd be so great to see a Xenoblade in 3D, you know? Not necessarily enough for me to buy it and play it again, I'll tell you that. But having right just beaten it, just yeah. It. I mean, I'm sure I could beat it in less than 145 hours now, but I still don't know if I'd want to go back and play it. There's other games warranting my attention. But so, yeah, I see it as a plus and just fine. Now, the analog mini stick, I'd be very curious to see how that feels. Because using like those kind of sticks on like, and I'm sure they're very different, but it reminds me of those mice sticks that you find on old laptops.
Yeah. Right.
And those things were kind of annoying. But then again, I wasn't using my thumb. I was using an index finger or something. And those aren't, that's not the most precise movement necessarily, like a thumb would be. So, So I don't know. It's interesting. It does kind of suck that it cuts out the Circle Pad Pro compatibility, but maybe that's just a technical reason, and I don't know. I don't know the answer to behind that.
Well, what's weird there is, because I feel like, well, first of all, aren't they even calling it a C-Stick, or is that just what some fans have kind of dubbed it?
I don't know.
Okay, regardless, it kind of feels like, you know, that they've got this new Smash Brothers coming out, and they really want people to feel like they can enjoy that Smash Brothers experience on the 3DS, and a lot of people were kind of worried about not having that stick there. So, I mean, so to some extent, it almost feels like this is a design like just made for that game, because I don't know why otherwise they wouldn't just put a second circle pad over there, because I think for most games, if you're going to be controlling a camera like they showed in the Monster Hunter demo, it would just be more comfortable. I think you've already got a really, I think, good designed stick control on the other side. I don't know why they wouldn't just mirror that, but if you think about trying to use that the way you use the C-Stick in Smash Brothers, it might not be ideal. So I don't know. It's a really curious decision.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it's going to be there. I had always felt that it would be nice to have that second stick. I just didn't. Once they got out of the gate without one, my stance was I just didn't want them to, you know, divide the base immediately or anything. So
right. I'm not sure how useful it'll even be, to be honest with you, because like with Smash Brothers, the C-Stick only just did the same things that your Smash attacks did, right, in the various directions.
Yeah.
So it's like almost like a very vague shortcut. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's for power players who might be able to use that, I guess. In Xenoblade, you only use that to control camera. So, you know, it shouldn't be pivotal. I think the more important factor with the system is just the better processor, which, you know, and could cause certain games to be on it that wouldn't be elsewhere, so.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is.
Yeah. I guess some other aspects that were a bit, I wouldn't necessarily say controversial, but the faceplates on the small 3DS. That's kind of a new thing I didn't see them going towards.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's... I feel like I need to see that in a little more depth, but, I mean, unless I'm mistaken, that pretty much lets you have any special edition 3DS at this point, you know, assuming they make the faceplate for it, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. And we don't know how the faceplates really work, if you can buy a clear one and put in your own print, or if you have to get the officially licensed ones, or, you know, there probably will be unlicensed ones that you can add as well. So that whole damn market's going to grow. It's interesting that it's only on the small one, but
yeah.
I guess that's probably because making two different sizes would just be a lot more hassle. But I still think it'd be pretty cool. I mean, I love my XL Zelda 3DS, and it does not necessarily make me want to trade up for one that I can't make look as spiffy, you know, especially when they're going to have spiffy looking ones eventually.
I mean, they're not actually for the 3DS XL then?
Nope. They're just for the regular standard one.
Oh.
The new standard XL 3DS. No, not the XL, but yeah, just the standard one. The tiny one. The dinky, yes. Yeah, so I just thought that was weird. And based on the prices that are on I think it's Nintendo's Japanese website, if you translated the yen directly to dollars, US dollars, it's about $15 for a lot of them. There are some $10 ones, and I think there's even some that are closer to like 20. So it seems like the average price is 15, which to me is a lot of money for plates. Maybe it's not really if you look at the overall cost of the system, but I mean...
Well, it's cheaper than buying a new system.
It is. But I don't know. They haven't really impressed me too much with the design so far to make me want to put $15 just to change how it looks. That said, I did kind of do that with my Zelda 3DS. yeah, because there was no game that... Oh, no, it did come with A Link Between Worlds, which I gave to my girlfriend, so there was some value there that I got. But I don't, you know, I'm not convinced the faceplates will look as good as my 3DS XL Zelda edition, so... Yeah. I mean, it just depends on how they come across and how flush they sit with your system. If they're not going to click in perfectly every time, then it's going to be feeling weird, as you can feel seams and stuff like that. That's a little weird to me.
Right.
But then again, you know, I was a fan of my N64 Ultra controller with the different faceplates around the turbo button, you know, back in the day. So I guess I haven't been always opposed to this sort of thing. I guess I just would like to see it in the XL realm too. And that's another thing, is that the two are vastly different in style, which makes sense, I guess, but it seems like the smaller one's got the cooler look. You know, by default it's got the Famicom Super Famicom colored buttons.
Right.
Yeah. And the letters of the XL are colored. So there's that, but the actual the whole aesthetic is designed kind of around that for the smaller size. So they look like M&Ms almost.
Yeah. I got to say, I always, ever since they released the DS XL, I always have thought that was definitely my preferred way to play. I just like the larger screens. It looks nicer while I'm playing the games, but, the exterior aesthetic little perks this time around, you know, I'm still gonna go with the XL version, but it gave me pause. Certainly it made me stop and think, because yeah, I mean, there's something kind of appealing about those quirky little button colors and being able to swap out plates instead of like wrestling with this decision to buy a new special edition every time they come out. So I think it's actually a pretty smart way to, like, rather simply give some bonuses to the what might be considered the lesser version. You know, if you just sit the two side by side, you might. I think it's a natural tendency to be like, oh, you know, the smaller one is like the budget version or something like that. But now you can really point to some differences. They're just stylistic, but you know, some just little bonuses that are only available on that version, which is interesting.
So were you guys both planning on getting one?
Well, Joe, it sounds like you're pretty set on it.
True. I don't know where the money's coming from, but I have till next year to figure that out, right?
Well, and that's kind of where my stance is. I mean, I was talking to my girlfriend about it. The first thing she said was, so you're going to buy one? And I said, I don't know. I mean, I've gone through my third 3DS now. I had my original. Is still actually sitting around somewhere, but that had the screen scratch issue. So I was pretty excited to upgrade to my XL for the first time, and that was a blue one. And then when the Zelda thing came out, I was like, oh, I really kind of want that. I can give the game to my girlfriend. My friend from Jersey, she never owned her own kind of handheld, so I was like, well, I could give her this for Christmas, and then that would excuse me to get a new one. So I justified it like crazy and succeeded. But now for this, there's no reason for me to give anything to anyone in the same vein, and it still looks great. It's not scratched. I mean, my girlfriend, you might wonder, why did I not give her the XL? But she actually likes the smaller screen, and so she asked me, yeah, if I was going to get this, and I said I wasn't sure yet. I'm not really sold on it yet. I want to see what other games come out for it, or are planned for it anyway, and I'd like to see, I guess that's kind of it. That and the price. I'm presuming it's going to be cost effective and just like anything else, probably 180 or whatever. I guess I want to see some hands-on experience with it, whether it's through videos, but people actually using it and critiquing it, or it's me at a store trying it out. It's not something I'll buy day one for sure.
I think right now I'm probably going to pass on it.
Yeah.
I have two DSs. Two 3DSs. I started with the launch one. And eventually came around to upgrading to the XL. And, you know, I just have the blue XL, but I just really love it. I think it's a great system. And I don't quite see enough here enticing enough to do the upgrade, at least not yet. I've never owned a Circle Pad Pro, and I've never really felt the desire so much to have a second analog stick on the screen on the 3DS. So I think I'm pretty good with my own thing right now. I actually skipped out on the DSi as well for similar reasons. I was just okay with the DS Lite that I had. So I might just hold back unless they release like this must-have game exclusive to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like I was kind of saying too, is I didn't have a Circle Pad, and I haven't really seen much need, even in Xenoblade, to like have that camera control. Mm-hmm. In games. I mean, I guess they're only going to release games that'll start using it, so there will be some value there, but I'd have to see what those will be. I'm still going to be able to play Picross E5 on it, and SteamWorld Dig, you know, whenever they have their sequel, stuff like that, so I'm not really worried about it from that perspective. There's also the viewing angles aspect, which is enticing, but I'm also someone who doesn't have a problem keeping it straight on my head, you know, in my eyesight. Do you guys ever have problems with kind of keeping the 3D right?
A little bit if I'm not sitting perfectly still on my bed or whatever. Like if I'm in a car or in the bathroom.
TMI.
I'm not the only one that plays a DS in the bathroom, man.
I mean, in a bathroom, maybe not, but depends on what you're doing simultaneously.
I see. Okay.
I have considered taking a bath with, not actually bringing the thing in, like, under the water, but, you know, just kind of chilling out in the bathtub, soaking up, playing.
I've done that.
I just don't know if I'd want to. I'd have to have something set up to, to catch it if it fell, or. Plus, I like hot baths, so, you know, things get steamy and, bounce-a-wow-wow. No, you know, I mean, anything with a screen, you know, is going to fog up pretty quick. So, you know, the only thing I've ever read in the bathtub or done in the bathtub was read like an actual book. But
I've definitely played Oracle games and Mario Golf in the bathtub. Mm-hmm. And
I played DDR once.
You played DDR in the bathtub?
Just think about that. You know, some people have little flowers, you know, for texture so you don't slip in the tub. I've got a DDR mat.
DDR mat, all right.
Give me a break. Just, you know.
It's a good way to do things. I've actually played my gamepad in the tub as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice.
My Wii U can just barely reach our master bathroom, which is nice.
Well, I like how, you know, Nintendo saw those ads back in the day where, like, guy's on the crapper and he's got, like, a mirror helping him see the TV as he's still playing. And they're like, hey, let's just bring the screen into the bathroom. So they gave him a gamepad, you know.
Ah, there we go.
That's why that idea was formed, so.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
There's one thing about the upgraded viewing angles that I'm not sure about. I don't know if you guys can help confirm this or not. But I thought I read somewhere that it's not necessarily that the screen itself has been upgraded, but that they would use the camera to track where your eyes are, and then the screen would kind of adjust accordingly. So that it wasn't really like a truly upgraded viewing angle. It was just kind of like a software augmented viewing angle. But have any of you heard similar, or is this like total rumor or what?
That's new to me.
Yeah. Okay.
Wait.
Because if it's just, yeah.
No, it's that's actually I think how it works is it's not like the screen is necessarily better, but the camera is watching along with the gyroscope to see where you're at, to adjust whatever it has to on the fly to make it match your movements. So yeah, okay. It's not like the screen is just a static screen with better viewing angle through technology. It's actually, you know, watching you to some degree.
Right.
It's getting feedback.
So that, I'll say that if that system works, then that would be amazing. But I don't know how much, I would be pleasantly surprised if it works, like, as advertised. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that might not be enough to really get a difference, and I don't know, we'll see. I mean, you know, if the Kinect can read your heartbeat, then maybe this can follow your eyes without any problems.
I think that's kind of the coolest thing about the new 3DS is that wider viewing angle.
Mm-hmm. Right. I just want its wider viewing angle to be you know, from left to right across, not up and down, because if I'm in the bathtub, I don't want it looking anywhere it shouldn't be looking, you know? So let's keep that straight, Nintendo, all right?
Eyes to yourself, 3DS.
Yeah, eyes are up here, okay? yeah, I guess we'll see, and that's kind of what we're stuck with, is finding out if the technology works. It almost feels like a firmware update as opposed to you know, an actual like technological upgrade. Since we don't really know how well it works. It's a real concern. But hey, I mean, I think that if they're advertising it as a key feature, they must have tested it enough to be confident in it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they might have just ignored it.
That would be really nice, though. I mean, you know, that is something that over the months of using my 3DS, my time spent with the 3D on has definitely decreased, which is something that I didn't expect to happen. I mean, I was all about it at the start. So if they could help out with that would be nice. Cause if I do, you know, I miss it, but I just kind of got fed up with the ghosting, and actually even more than that, the frame rate going down. And I'm not like a frame rate guru, but, when you're playing a game with the 3D off and you see it all nice and smooth and then you turn it on and you kind of lose that, that became a little annoying for me. So that could be another thing. I'm kind of hoping that maybe if that boost in the hardware maybe could keep it such that you could keep the 3D on and you wouldn't get that, frame rate loss.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I think, if that were the reality, probably Nintendo might have made a big deal about that, but hard to say. So, but definitely something I'm gonna be looking for.
Sure. Can you remember any specific games that helped out in when you turned the 3D
off? What do you mean helped out in?
Like any specific games where you saw the it lag when the 3D was on, so turning it off was to assist.
Oh,
making it
all
better.
All of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Isn't that just kind of by default? Doesn't it always cut the frame rate in half? I'm pretty sure.
I guess I've never really paid close attention. I mean, some games I think are running at such a high frame rate normally that cutting it down puts it back to normal, I thought.
I'm thinking, I hope I don't sound like a moron here, but I think it runs at like 60 frames a second for all games, and then when you put the 3D on, it goes down to 30, which 30 is standard anyway. But
I remember hearing something about that around the time it launched, but I don't know if that's still the case. I definitely remember that specifically for, I want to say, the Tekken game that came out very close to the 3DS launch. I remember very specifically hearing about that then, but I don't know if that's actually still the case for most games.
Sure. I mean, they've had some firmware updates since, and maybe it was patched or something.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm not 100% sure.
And I could have been just oblivious to it. I use 3D on and off periodically. I don't really have a method to the madness, so I've never really studied it, you know?
Sure.
The last thing that I have written down, although feel free to jump in with other, additions to this, version, but the Amiibo support, it naturally built in has a functionality to read your future Amiibo trophies or toys or whatever, which kind of bums me out that this just wasn't in it already. I don't know how early they were thinking of Amiibo, but the Wii U didn't come out that much later than the 3DS. And I wish they just would have put the damn thing in the system already. Because right now you have to use a little white hockey puck to do infrared talking to your current 3DS. And the Wii U, of course, does natively have that functionality. But it almost feels like it's worth buying this 3DS just to have that if you're going to use Amiibo. So you don't have to deal with a little dingy, you know, that you can lose or something and...
I guess this functionality kind of depends on how heavily Nintendo plans to support Amiibo for 3DS games.
Right.
I'd be really tempted if it was some Smash Brothers stuff, you know, I'll be honest. But,
I know that they're supposed to do something like that. It's supposed to be able to, I think it's supposed to be able to cross the Wii U and the 3DS.
I see.
Like, you're supposed to have one character that you can build on both. I thought. Okay.
But you said there was still an external, like, thing you could use for Amiibo support in older 3DSs.
Yeah, it's like a little white, it's almost like a base of an Amiibo, but thicker, and they've shown that it, you know, I think you stick the character on that, and then probably just move it in line so the infrared port can read, and then it just transfers it that way, like your Wii Fit meter would. Which is functional, but not necessarily ideal. One thing that I did just think of as far as functionality that I thought was pretty cool is, of course, it's not exactly clear in my mind what it was anymore, which is embarrassing, but the ability for your 3DS to talk with your computer
and back up
files without actually having to, like, plug in SD cards.
Yep.
So it's able to do some file transfer, which that alone is almost kind of neat, because, like, right now, Animal Crossing won't even let me take any more pictures because it's maxed out. And I don't think it's the SD card. I think the game, it just maybe has a limit on how many pictures you can have saved of it. And so it would be really nice if I could just easily trade that over instead of having to take the card out, go through the thing, and back it up or whatever. Not like it's hard, but it's enough to not make me do it. So that is kind of a neat feature. And if there's going to be any... Maybe there's an improved music player for certain games, so it'd be nice to be able to send files from your computer to your 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
There was definitely a time with Animal Crossing where I was loving taking the screenshots, and I really liked almost chronicling the growth of my town and my community with these screenshots and moving them over to my computer to make room for new ones. But it was really just that process of moving them over, as simple as it is, just to take out the SD card, that kind of made me stop.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what the next game would be that would make me want to do that again, but it would certainly be nice to know that that wouldn't be an issue going forward.
I had the same experience. I mean, my review of Animal Crossing, which I wrote, I think it was late last year, for the, you know, the, we were doing the contest and everything. And, I mean, I wrote in such a way that it was like memories from the characters. Mm. And, so it came in handy that I had all these screenshots that I took of my characters, and I could tell the review from their perspective of the actual things that happened. And,
yeah.
So it really worked out that I had all these available, and I do love chronicling that stuff. Like when a character's gonna leave, I usually take a picture of me and them, you know.
Yeah.
Just cause, you know, Spork, oh, the bastard didn't tell me he was gonna move, so I couldn't stop him, and now he's going. And, now he taunts me by visiting my frickin' shopping center. And telling me how great his new town is, you know. But.
What a jerk.
You know, of course, this was the first Animal Crossing I had a girlfriend at the same time I was heavily into it. So, you know, us being adorable and, dressing up and sitting on benches together and being funny and, you know, a lot of those stupid memories, but I have those now thanks to the easy feature of that. So it would be nice to manage those pictures better, because if you go through the 3DS camera itself, it's slow as hell to load the pictures to do whatever. So if I could just, without even taking the card out of my computer or out of my system and just having it talk to my computer, look at it, maybe delete pictures, copy pictures, do all that stuff, that'd be amazing. It would be a step up, and it would be worth it for me to buy a new one at that point.
Yeah, that general interface stuff for, like, the 3DS and a lot of the Wii U stuff as well, it's just, sometimes, I mean, even though it's just kind of small steps in the grand scheme of things, it's kind of enough to prevent us from, like, feeling like doing stuff.
Yeah.
Even stuff like booting up a game, you know, something as small as that, like if it takes too long, it might make me change my mind from wanting to play a game to just going to do something else.
Mm. Yeah.
Just because I don't feel like turning on the system, booting up the game, you know, pressing past the, you know.
Yeah, it is amusing sometimes how how lazy we can be.
Yeah, there's something to be said for instant gratification when it comes to interface things like that.
I know it sounds ridiculous, but for me to transfer those photos from my 3DS, I have to turn it all the way off, step one, take out the card, pull my iMac out from where it's at. You know, I have little figures on my desk, I have cords, all this stuff. They all get unraveled, so I can slide the card in the back slot of the iMac. And then I have to load it up, and then I have to copy it, but you can't delete them from the computer, because then you're going to screw up the library on the card, and then I have to put it back in my system, then go through and delete them one by one, or maybe I can do a mass deletion, but, it's just cumbersome to do the whole process, so I've just lived with not having taken any more photos. And, I keep telling myself, you know what, this weekend I'm going to do that. Yeah. You know, I'm going to spring clean my 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, no, I'm going to just enjoy the sun, watch Doctor Who, do none of that crap. So, you know, that was a really cool feature for me to see, and, but still not enough to buy. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for it, but I just have such an awesome system now, which I guess is a testament to the 3DS as it stands, that I'm not necessarily, dying to get this. But they did a nice job of showing it off. The trailer was really slick.
Mm-hmm.
And until I found out just how different the two versions were, I was very amped. But then I realized the XL, the one I'd want, is actually nerfed in some aesthetics and everything.
Mm.
But yeah, so, I mean, we'll see. We'll see how it comes. We'll see how much it costs. We'll see if it comes with any games. We'll see all that stuff. I think it'll be interesting for them to release it. I mean, not that they've always had a holiday for the other special editions, but to release it probably not at a holiday, because I don't think they're going to wait a whole year to release it for our holiday season, to just plain old release it and see what happens. You know, I don't think Xenoblade would be enough to maybe have people buy it, and so we'll see how it does.
You know, not to restart the whole conversation, but I guess, how surprised were you guys that this even came out? I mean, even disregarding the whole potential, like, it plays games the other versions won't, but just another redesign at all. I kind of thought that they were done.
Oh, yeah.
Because I kind of felt like with the DS, it was like, okay, you have the original system, and then you have the DS Lite, and it was like, I think that was the real, like, tipping point where everyone just fell in love with that design, where everyone was like, okay, you know, the gameplay ideas of the original DS are great, but now with this DS Lite, like, this is the form that we really wanted in the first place. And now, okay, you've nailed that. And then the DSi was sort of a awkward thing, but then the DSXL was like, okay, all right, these great handheld games now with a more quote unquote immersive view. So then when they did the 3DS, it kind of felt like they skipped right to the light version, so to speak, with the original, because I think the form was much, much more similar to the DS Lite. Mm-hmm. And then a little while after, they're like, oh, okay, you know, people liked the DSi XL, and I'll say for me, like, that was my favorite system at the time, like, ever. It was so everything I was looking for. So then when they did that for the 3DS, I was like, great, you know, they didn't get rid of that option. You know, they learned that there are folks out there like myself who are looking for that in their handheld. And then the 2DS was kind of like, all right, I guess there's a, you know, maybe a more budget market or for kids if they're worried about the 3D thing. So you've got that as well. And then I kind of thought there was nowhere else to go or nowhere else logical to go. So were you guys in that boat or were you just, or is it just like, okay, you know, hardware redesigns come out every now and then, so why would this be any different?
I wasn't really too surprised by it. It kind of feels a little bit like the DSi to me, like a bit of a stopgap, because the DS had the DS Lite, and then it had the DS XL. Did they have the DS XL before the DSi? Can't remember.
No.
Okay, no, so it was DSi, then the XL came out.
Right.
Okay.
Because it's technically a DSi XL.
DSi XL. I see.
Right.
So there is no DS. There is no vanilla DS XL.
Correct.
No, it just naturally was huge.
Naturally huge.
Right.
So I don't know. I think Nintendo introducing variations on their handhelds is pretty par for the course, personally. I mean, I was a little surprised. It was a new system, but I felt pretty in character for the company.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's where I land too. It felt in character, but I definitely wasn't expecting them to do it. I didn't think that it was necessary, that it was part of the game plan, but the fact that it happened was like, oh, okay, I guess I can see where they're going. You know, it didn't seem out of character.
I guess I also had the thought that, like, with the DS, by the time those other versions were coming out, it seemed like the system had been so wildly successful that it was almost like, you could bring those out, and they'd been so wildly successful for such a long time that it was almost like, okay, well, we know you love this experience, but maybe it's getting a little stale, so like, here's just a little refresher. Whereas with where the 3DS was at, I felt like it was really just like, it was really just getting on truly solid ground where it was like in full stride. And then it kind of felt like to have this come out in the midst of that stride was, I don't know, seemed surprising, because it's like, we aren't bored of it yet. You know, like, we don't, like, we're still right in the thick of enjoying it, it felt like. So, I don't know. That was just a odd perspective.
I can see that too. It didn't feel like, I don't know, I'm just rehashing your words now. Yeah, it didn't feel like it was necessary. I mean, but now that it's here, you know, it's fine. It doesn't seem like it's unnecessary either.
Right.
But I don't think anyone was clamoring for this.
Right.
The DSi was definitely something that I know a lot of people wanted. I stupidly stuck with my fat DS the entire generation.
Interesting. That's
I had a PHAT fat one, so.
Right. Of course.
But the but yeah, even with a broken hinge like 6 months before the 3DS came out, I still stuck with it. And
that's awesome.
You know, just because I never really bought into redesigns, and of course now I've had 3DSs, so they've broken me, but I don't think that this is the same vein at all as the DSi was, or the DSi XL even. This is clearly them just, to me, it's just them adding things for the sake of adding things. And again, I think there's a long game going on. As they're bridging their stuff together. And
that could be the most interesting question mark, is just how much and how soon that would start happening.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think with the next console release, we might see something more comparable to it too. You know, I still can't imagine them ever making a 3DS that is a controller for a console. That doesn't seem right. I feel like the way that they're built is just inherently different. To me, the gamepad is way more robust feeling than the 3DS. Even though the 3DS is a sturdy machine, but just the way the buttons are designed, the placement of the buttons as far as how they feel in your hands, because you have a screen, you know, the screens in certain ways and different kinds of screens. But maybe they'll do a 3D gamepad that you can take on the go. I don't know what they're gonna do. I can't imagine them doing a Wii U type console with a clamshell controller either.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I don't know if I believe in this whole like truly merging the two markets, but maybe they're trying to make them more the same so they can do cross-platform purchasing, or you know, they can just, they don't have to make a game just for a console or just for a handheld. They can just do both and let people make the decision of where they want to play.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure if that's the best route for them either. I mean, I don't know if that would siphon sales to some degree. Though I don't think people are buying the same game on two different consoles that often either. But I have no idea what the hell they're thinking. But when they do, Iwata will bring it directly to me. I know that.
Directly.
That's true.
So that's all I know. I'm an idiot that likes making myself laugh. Let me just admit that. Because that joke was just for me.
Mm.
My little personal favorite treat.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So that's all I've got for the 3DS. I'm sure there's a lot more in the thread. Chris BG99 had said, "Candy colored buttons!"
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
People are saying, "Give me a Majora's Mask themed one, and I'm in." stuff like that. And I won't say what Brooke just said, or what he said. That's pretty graphic. but, yeah, so, I mean, there's not... I can't think of anything else that's new. Oh, does it have a better battery life?
Yes. I heard it had 7 hours.
Is that with 3D on or off?
Not 100% sure.
Because the XL has pretty decent battery life if it's off.
Yeah, it does actually.
But if it's on, I think it sucks down like 2.5 hours. So if they could get something more like 5 hours on a 3D, I think that'd be better. Mm. I mean, I've got a car adapter, so I don't really worry about it. You know, I just plug that thing in when I'm on the road.
I think better battery life is usually kind of a given for DS upgrades.
So that's another reason that they didn't maybe focus on, but that'd be another reason to buy, I think, for some people.
Yeah, true.
So I don't know. I guess that's it then. Anything else you guys want to add?
That's about it, yeah.
No? Okay. Well, that kind of wraps it up for the show then.
All right.
You know, we didn't hit 3 hours, so I think we should just babble on for another half hour or so. But, or maybe we can just go on with our lives.
Call it a night.
Yeah, call it a night. It's
get back to being hyped about Smash.
Yeah, plus you got a comic to work on, damn it.
It is true. I am currently doing a 5-part story arc.
Oh yeah. All right.
Close it out.
So wait. Let's see. So is that how many comics are left?
Not exactly. No. Actually.
Okay. Okay. Well,
still a couple of secrets. But this is a story arc that that is meant to be kind of a big ending for the characters and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I'm very intrigued when everyone rips off their faces and they're all Waluigi.
I'm looking forward to that Kirby jumping over the shark on the motorcycle.
Yeah. Awesome. After
I think that happened a couple years ago.
He's got to suck the Fonz first, though. He has to inhale the Fonz.
Oh, he's got to inhale the Fonz. Yep. That's right.
Then it will work. Yeah. Anyway, so hopefully neither of our ideas are actually it, because we don't want to have spoiled them with stupid jokes. But Yeah. So you've got some work to do. I've got some editing to do now, I guess. I want this out, sooner than later. Mm-hmm. And, Joe, you have stuff.
Wow.
I don't know. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with your free time after this podcast ends, Joe?
I'm going to do work.
You're going to do work.
You should play the 3DS in the bathtub.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to get all pornographic again. Anyway, I feel like Joe took my pause as some sort of slight, and I did not mean it to.
That's okay.
But, okay, so, you know, that comes to an awkward close. Thanks to the listeners for dropping by on yet another episode, a fun-filled informational episode. Matt, it's always very good to talk to you about your stuff, because I think we get a really cool perspective on things that we're exposed to, but we get a different perspective, and so it's always fun to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we should have you on when you're not promoting something too, because you've been a good addition to the 3DS chat and everything else. And
thanks.
But you're always able to talk to on the boards.
I am a Nintendo fan first and foremost, for sure.
Amen, brother. Mm-hmm. So everyone out there, please take some consideration to check out these Kickstarters we've talked about. You know, help fund them, help get these games and books and everything made. And because you're going to enjoy it, we're going to enjoy it, and then we'll talk about it on the podcast, and then you're going to enjoy it again. It's like regurgitated enjoyment. You know, so
what could be better?
Yeah.
That could have been phrased better. But
I don't think it could have been phrased any better. In fact, regurgitated enjoyment should be the name of the podcast. But I think I actually want people to listen to it. So
yeah, really.
Anyway, Joe and I would really appreciate if you guys out there would comment on what you've heard. Do so on negativeworld.org. Just hop on over to the site and find the thread associated to the episode. And tell us what you think. And tell us, you know, about your experiences on the Kickstarters and what you think, or what tiers you submitted at. And, you know, just chat with us. We love it. And if you're not a subscriber and you don't feel like it, to each their own. But you can reach us to the Facebook page. You just got to search for negativeworld.org, or you can follow us on Twitter, of course, at @negative_world. You can follow me, who occasionally retweets my own Negative World posts, if you want to get your Negative World news that way, but it's kind of a limited scope. But that said, thanks again to listeners. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Matthew. You know, keep making us Nintendo gamers smile, man.
All right. Well, thanks, guys.
All right.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Have a good night, everyone.
All right. You too.
All right. Bye.